Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Yeah, the music comes up, the theme plays, it's like, Bugs Bunny. Ah, da, da, do, 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 do. Anyway, just waiting for Brianna Cannon to call in, and we'll do our government inquiry report. And we've been talking off the air about a bunch of different topics, so I have no idea exactly where she's going to want to go this morning. Big news, of course, in Florida is Hurricane Ian. And I always think they miss a great chance to include Democrats in the names here. I mean, where's Hurricane Hillary? Where's Hurricane Barack? Let's have some fun here. And of course, we can take the Geldings as well. We could have Hurricane Kevin, Hurricane who's another good Gelding out there. Anyway, they're all out there. But that's what's happening now. So where I am in Milton, Florida, I'm right near Pensacola. So I am supposedly out of the cone of possibilities here. So we shall see. But my hurricane was Sally, and so it's quite an experience. In fact, Brianna's on the line now. Let's see if she has any weather experience. Brianna, did you ever get caught in a hurricane or any major storm or any really big event, weather event or anything like that? Good morning.
Good morning. I'm in Oklahoma, so there's been tornadoes, but people all just passed right by us.
Yeah, you get tornadoes. I forgot about that. I have not been through a tornado. In fact, I sort of joke around my experience of weather. I was in New England for the blizzard of 78. I was in San Francisco for the earthquake of 89. I was here for Hurricane Sally. I figured next I should, move next to a volcano or something like that. Get the full range of earth events. Fortunately, I've been fine, and it's, knock on wood there. But, so it's a good it's interesting that it's a – just, life, you experience all these crazy things can happen to you. And it doesn't matter where you are. Something's going to happen someday, somehow, some way. So it's kind of interesting. Anyway, where should we go this morning? What would you like to talk about?
I was going to talk about Patriot Academy this morning because I keep saying that I would. So I decided I'll do it today.
Hey, listen, you can change your mind. I change my mind constantly throughout the show. In fact, sometimes it's so bad I have to change the title of the show because we get so far from what we decided to do. But I'd rather be spontaneous and interesting than follow a format and be boring. So you're always free to change your mind. Don't think for a second you're restricted in topics. But tell me about Patriot Academy, because I want to get those folks involved with the show and us involved with them, because there's a whole army of potential lobbyists out there that have been through Patriot Academy. And I think once you've got all this wonderful experience, let's keep it going. Let's keep the momentum. So tell me what's happening there now.
So there's the part you already know about the Student Leadership Congress, which we've also talked about with Amber. But they also have like a bunch of different classes and courses that you can go to learn. One of the reason that I actually heard about it, I started with biblical citizenship, and
what's
it's a course that you can take. And I don't remember how many days or because they do like one day a week. How I did it,
right?
But whenever I did it, it's kind of like an online lesson that we had Eddie Shearer. He was like the coach or whatever, because they would train him to teach it, and then he'd come in and he'd teach it and he'd put up the videos and stuff, and he did an amazing job. And it goes through all of this information on how America was founded on biblical principles, and it tells you about the founding fathers and American blueprints. Have you ever heard of the National Monument to Our Forefathers?
No, I thought I've heard of national monuments. I've been to D.C., so I've seen the Washington Monument. I spent a lot of time in the Lincoln Memorial and the Jefferson Memorial, but I don't know of one particular national monument.
Yeah, it's called National Monument to Our Forefathers. It's in
where is it?
Plymouth, Massachusetts, or close to there.
Near the Rock?
I think. I'm pretty sure. I'll just double check on that.
Okay.
But it's the largest granite monument in America. And it's like hidden by a bunch of trees and in this neighborhood. So it's actually, most people don't know about it. And they have different figures all around it. And it's a beautiful statue. You could probably find it on Google and look at pictures and stuff.
Well, I'll post on it now. Yeah. So it's called the National Monument to Our Founders. What was the title again?
Forefathers. Yeah, okay. National Monument to Our Forefathers. And in the biblical citizenship class, one of the videos had a part of Kirk Cameron explaining it all. He also has a movie about it. It's called Monumental, I think. And he goes in depth explaining it and stuff. And it has, like, a statue of faith and liberty and education and different things like that. And it's just so detailed. And they call it, like, the blueprint of America.
You know, this is really interesting. Because, yeah, what's interesting about it, and I got Pianki on the line too, so he'll probably join us in a second. What's interesting is that the communist Marxist left that controls the schools and controls a lot of media and a lot of Hollywood and a lot of, public opinion, wants to convince everybody that this is a nation based on slavery and a bunch of other stuff. So anything like this is being hidden. I hadn't heard of it. You know, and I'm pretty aware of what's going on, and I had never heard of this, but it makes sense that you're not going to hear about, especially the values. Later on in the show, I've got a couple of hours after you and Josie, and I'm sort of I'm going to be focusing on what's going on in Europe right now. We've got Nigel Farage in England. We've got Giorgio Meloni, probably butchered her name, the new prime minister of Italy. Marine Le Pen, who should have been Prime Minister of France or President of France. There's a lot of stuff going on, and all these people have one thing, and Trump here. They all have the same thing in common. They love their country. They're nationalists in the sense of loving their country, you know, and doing things to promote like America first. And all this stuff is being trounced by the globalists who are saying, no, it's a all this is wrong. You know, we're all collective. You know, we don't want property. We want, our energy. We're going to tell you what to do. So in other words, it's this massive globalist control thing. And one of the things they all seem to do in all these countries, including ours, is take away identity, your personal identity, your religious identity, your spiritual, your national, your gender identity. I mean, everything along the way is designed to take away everything of who you are and replace it with something else. So the idea of taking this national monument and not emphasizing it and not making it a priority and not talking about our founding values fits right in with the Marxist model that we're going through right now. This is a really interesting time in history. You know, I'm curious what you think of it all, but does that make sense as to why this would not be something that people would know as much about?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. So, Patriot Academy. Go ahead. You had more to say? I'm sorry.
Yes. So, the class, I don't remember how many days we had it for, but while you're doing the class, you can also go online, and they have this workbook. And they basically have, like, fill in the lines where you fill in the lines, like, words or whatever from the lesson stuff. Basically, I think it's meant to help you learn it better. But it fills in the answers anyway. So if you don't know, it works for you well to get the answers and stuff. And so it's not like you have to stress about it or anything. And whatever program or lesson that you do, it's saved to your account or your email that you had set up on there. So you can always go back and review any of the material. I think that's a really good part about it, because it's not just like one and done. It's always there for you to go back and reference.
Well, that's the problem with education anyway. You take your test and you forget everything. I mean, the cumulative knowledge that people have from school, it's designed to make – I mean, that's what summer holidays for. It's designed to make you forget everything. Whatever minuscule amount that people learn in government schools, they forget it over the summer anyway. So you're basically starting pretty much almost at zero every year. What's interesting about the title, Biblical Citizenship, because immediately, you know, you're going to hear people say, what about the separation of church and state, you know, the one that doesn't exist? This is fascinating. So, and it's also interesting to learn the Patriot Academy goes all year. Oh, go ahead. Tell me.
It talks about that, how, and it's very commonly known at this point, how it was one letter by Thomas Jefferson, because it was like a mother or a woman, and she was writing them concerned about, the church taking over. I think it was the church taking over.
I did report. I have a piece on that. Yeah. No, you're a little bit off. Now, I don't know if we have time, I might play it at the end. I'll see you. I'll talk to Josie.
Yeah.
But I made the church a state. What it was the Danbury Baptists. So Danbury, Connecticut. I forgot about the capital. What's the capital of Connecticut? Danbury, isn't it? Maybe it is Danbury. Anyway. The religious majority at the time were Congregationalists. And back in those days, back in these are the 16, that would have been the 1700s because it's Jefferson. They didn't have a any prohibition about people having a state religion. Well, they did have a state religion prohibition. It was the First Amendment, but it didn't apply to the states. It only applied to the federal government. And so the Danbury Baptists were being discriminated against by the Congregationalists. In other words, if you wanted to hold office in Connecticut in the 1700s, the state religion was Congregationalist, so, or Presbyterian, one or the other. Anyway, I'll go back and check it. But the Baptists were the minority. And so, wait a minute. You know, what's going on here? We have every right to serve in government as the Congregationalists do. You know, you can't have a state religion. He said, yeah, that's right. And Jefferson's, yeah, exactly. So in other words, what Jefferson was really saying is that the First Amendment applies to the states as well. And that didn't happen until the 14th Amendment, you know, in the 1800s. But that's what that was really all about. And what's confusing for people is that they read or hear about Jefferson's answer, but nobody ever reads the Baptist question. And so the question was, how can, you know, what happens to us religious minority folks in a state where there's a state religion? And that's when Jefferson said, well, you can't have that. There should be a wall of separation between the individual and your religion and your church and God. You know, the state cannot be intervening. There cannot be a state religion. In other words, First Amendment, you can't establish a religion. That's what it was all about. It had nothing to do with mandating a separation of church and state regarding the fact that nothing, government could have anything to do with religion. What it meant was that government cannot have a state religion. There cannot be a government religion like the Church of England. You know, King Charles is now the head of the Church of England. He's like the lead bishop, you know, the Archbishop of Canterbury, and above him is King Charles. And so that's what it was really about. In fact, I should probably better play it. Let me see how long it is here, because this actually makes a lot of sense to do this, because I explain it better when I have all the information in front of me. Does that make sense? Had you heard about that at all or no? I'm just curious.
I've heard about, I didn't hear about the Connecticut Danbury story, or maybe I haven't, just forgot it.
Yeah.
But I heard about the rest about not having, like, the separation of powers that they have to control government and stuff mm-hmm. like that. But the separation of them entirely wasn't
yeah.
even a thought for them.
Huh.
And it also talks about how actually in those in the conventions and stuff, whenever they're making that, mm-hmm. Thomas Jefferson wasn't even there. He was like kind of on the outside of that part.
Mm-hmm. So what is a biblical citizen, though? Because we think of citizenship as to your country. But is this your citizenship with God? Or how does it work exactly?
I think it really just talks about being a biblical citizen in the way that you still believe in God and you follow the blueprints that he's laid for us
okay.
and the foundations and what he wants, because that's kind of what America was built on. And as on, like, citizens of God, I mean, that's – I don't know if I would understand enough to comment on that properly.
No, that's fine. Yeah. And again, I ask all kinds of impossible questions because I like to think for myself. A lot of questions I ask don't have an answer. It's fun just to kind of speculate. So I'm thinking about biblical citizenship. So obviously you don't have citizenship with God. You know, we're all part of God's creation. And so the question is, we have citizenship with our country, but citizenship implies, you know, good behavior, loyalty. You know, it doesn't mean you know, doing what the government says exactly, which would be different than scripture. But it's a membership, and so if you're a biblical citizen, you're a member of, you know, God's community, as opposed to those that deny it, the atheists, the agnostics that aren't sure, and everything else. So I think it's more metaphorical than it is actually, you know, a citizenship with a passport and the whole bit. But it's an interesting way to think about it. So in other words, are you a, you know, not only a child of God but a citizen with your fellow citizens, with God? And it's an interesting way to look at it. And then you think, well, citizenship has values. And those values would be, you know, freedom, various other things that you talked about earlier. Does it make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah, we'll figure this out. So what were those values again? That you had like four of them. I'm gonna get these down here. You mentioned them earlier.
Yes. Let me find all four so I can be positive about it. But I know there's liberty and faith. Faith is actually, like, at the top center because they have one on four sides, like, kind of closer to the bottom. and then they have one on top in the middle of the whole entire thing.
So
and
Liberty.
She's got.
Okay.
And she has this. Hold on.
It's like the justice statue, where you have the
yes,
blindfolded woman with the scales of justice. Is that in there?
They have. I think it's less Liberty, not justice.
Okay. Well, while you're looking it up, actually, if you get the other three, I want to include those because this is interesting. The question is, and this is something we had to solve when I worked with Jen Clark in Australia, one of the founders of the Freedom Trucking Movement, and we had to define liberty. And it's not easy. It takes a little challenge. So have you puzzled over, or do you have a good working definition of liberty?
Freedom?
Yeah, they're similar, but there's a difference. Very big difference. Have you thought about it? It's an interesting question. Pianki, let's bring him in the conversation. Pianki, what's the difference between freedom and liberty?
Liberty is the ability to seek freedom.
Okay. Brianna?
Yeah.
You want to give it a shot? No, it's not. Hey, listen, there's no wrong answer here, okay? So this is not like, a school or a job interview where there's the right answer and a wrong answer. There is no right answer here. Well, there is sort of what I think, but I want to know what you think, first of all, and then I'll tell you what we came up with.
I think we all have an ability to try and seek freedom in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
Just some ways are like easier, more adaptable, and other ways you might get killed doing it. But you still have the ability to at least try. So with his definition, I think it's good, except for the word try makes it a little bit tricky.
Are you reading a definition?
The way that I comprehend
Hold on a second. Are you reading a definition, or is this the one that you've come up with? Brianna.
Oh, me?
Yeah, were you reading a definition?
No, I'm not
this
reading
it. Okay, I was just curious. Okay, so I wonder which is your thoughts and which is down there from something else. Pianki, go ahead.
Well, yes. It's just like having free will.
Mm-hmm.
You have liberty to go out and try to rob a bank knowing that the consequences is that you're going to give up your freedoms. So liberty is like free will. You can choose, but to be prepared to suffer the consequences, which in many cases will require you to give up your freedoms and be confined.
Interesting. What we came up with and took a little bit of research is that freedom, it's like the absence of control. So in other words, you're free to do anything you want, except we have laws, which kind of prevent it. So that is a certain measure of control. And the reason we did this is because we actually came up with a chart, at what point are we at liberty? So liberty is more societal. So liberty is the national. In other words, liberty is more for the group as opposed to freedom, which is for the individual. So individual freedoms create group liberty. And so if we have a nation at liberty, where liberty exists, it exists because we have a Bill of Rights, because that Bill of Rights is enforced, because we have courts that enforce it, police that enforce it. We have a society that collectively enforces, our individual liberty. But liberty is a societal and a national thing as opposed to freedom, because you can have individual freedoms. People take freedoms that are bad. I mean, you have the freedom to get drunk and kill yourself. That's not liberty. That's not a society at liberty. And so if you look at freedoms as individual and liberty as more of national or whichever, group or society you're putting together, it tends to make more sense. So what we decided, what we did when we invented this chart on where liberty is, liberty is the point where you have the maximum freedom, but just enough laws to keep you safe and in other words, personal protective laws and property laws. So in other words, you don't want to be on anarchy, because anarchy is no law. I mean, that's a terrible situation. That's tyranny, just as much as it is totalitarianism. Dictatorship is tyranny. So the question is, how many? But
yeah,
liberty. Is, go ahead. Yeah.
Brianna? Yeah, what the founding fathers made the point of, right? They instituted the government to mm-hmm. protect the inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, or mm-hmm. also known as property in some cases, of definitions.
Yeah, it could be more, though. I think happiness is more than property. That's something for us to discuss, actually, think about it. But go ahead, tell me. But you see where the use of liberty, they didn't say freedom. It's life liberty and the pursuit of happiness on a national level. It's not life freedom and the pursuit of happiness. It's two different things. And I think it's a distinction that's not made. People use these words interchangeably. And I think if you delve into it a little more, they're not really interchangeable. Anyway, go ahead.
You know,
but I think like the
go ahead, Brianna, and then we'll get to Bianchi.
Oh, so I think the really big part of that is that they instituted the government to secure those rights specifically, and that's kind of, I think, what you're talking about on which like freedoms do you limit, because you don't want to have anarchy, because anarchy will infringe on, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can't have
right.
anarchy and have all those things. And so they created the government to protect those rights.
And you can't have tyranny because that's absolute control by government, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Bianchi?
Yeah, you made mention of the courts. If courts come down with a decision, see, judges are supposed to listen to arguments between two parties and then render a decision based on the evidence that the parties present. If in political cases, at any time you think that the decision voids the Constitution, you have the liberty to tell the courts no.
Let's talk about that. Brianna, do you see the courts as a force for the protection of liberty or the protection of government, or both in different cases?
Protection of the government is a weird concept to think about.
I told you, it's not easy. It's not easy being on this show because we take on, you know, the questions that aren't being asked anymore. Think about that, because I mean, that just came out of my head. I don't know where that came from, but protection of government. I mean, that to me seems, you know, I said that for an obvious reason. A lot of my questions are loaded. I try not to be as biased as I am, and try not to be so obvious when I ask a question because they borderline on rhetorical most of the time anyway. But that's a do the courts protect liberty or the government, or does it depend on the situation? And
whenever
the judges and, you know,
whenever you hear protection of government, like my first thought is, oh, that doesn't sound good. But
no, it does. It doesn't sound good at all. Yeah, go ahead. No, I'm curious what you think.
But with that, I think the founding fathers did put some things like in the Constitution and stuff to protect individuals in the government or their jobs. And so you could say it would be protecting the government, because what happens is like they get to be in that job so long as they don't do this. So their job is protected unless this happens, or unless they were voted out, so it's not like a free-for-all. So I think there are some protections placed on the government jobs. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do, but that's not what I was getting to. When I think of protection of government, I think of the Congress that passes a law that's blatantly unconstitutional, and the court says it is by interpreting it, and then protects that government power. Listen to our Labor Day show. We just spent a lot of time on labor history. And there was a time when the Supreme Court had this bizarre doctrine called liberty of contract. And what it said was that the individual employee bargains equally with the individual employer on an equal basis. Well, that's patently absurd. That's irrational. You know, a manager bargains with the entire force of the company behind them with a poor employee who, you know, because of unemployment, you know, most likely has to take the job, whatever the conditions are. I mean, that's the way it was certainly back, you know, when the courts were doing this back in the early 1900s. And that's how labor unions formed, because labor unions said, wait a minute, this isn't equal at all. We're going to give the union, we're going to give an employee representation with the union equal to the manager's representation with the company. So the company is bargaining collectively with the union, not with some poor little individual. But the Supreme Court protected the corporations and the government power through this bizarre concept called liberty of contract. It's not the first time it's happened. Segregation was protected for years and years in the courts. Things, you know, today, they're just insane. Labor unions, federal government labor unions, which shouldn't exist. You know, John Kennedy, wrote an executive order saying that government workers can unionize, and it's been crazy ever since. So the government protects its own power. There's different examples, but the courts I see as not necessarily a force for good like they're supposed to be. Now, there are exceptions. Clarence Thomas, when he wrote the gun decision saying that New York cannot violate your Second Amendment rights, by having a May-issue concealed carry permit that they never gave anybody, that was a good thing. But then New York turns right around and says, okay, you can carry a gun. We'll do a shall issue permit, but you can't carry it in these places. And they listed virtually everything except your home. Government protects itself. This is why juries are more powerful than judges. This is why liberty, we are the guardians of liberty. It's supposed to be a government of we the people, not we the government. Oh, background noise. Who's making breakfast? Is it your place, Brianna?
Yeah, my mom's getting ice. Yeah.
Hi, Mom. When kind of like, when they get you, we'll get your folks on the phone sometime. That'd be kind of fun. Anyway, yeah. So if you have to mute yourself, feel free. If something's like crashing or something like that, just put your phone on mute and then unmute when we're back talking. But what do you think though about the idea of government protecting itself, and it's our job to maintain our liberty using the things in government that we have, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, the states against the federal government. It's a battle.
I think that that's very important, and that's one of the big problems today is whenever you use the Constitution to our benefit, people are trying to disregard the Constitution and our laws and stuff and our abilities to keep it in its bounds and to make sure they're doing it right and protecting us the way that they should be in our rights. And a lot now people are saying, oh, that's outdated. Oh, it's not good enough anymore. Oh, it didn't account for this or this or this. And people are trying to manipulate it into a non-existent form so they can have what they want without having those laws instituted. Yeah. And this is actually talked about a lot at Patriot Academy about how strong and true the Constitution was and how far the Founding Fathers actually did look ahead. And, of course, it's not absolutely perfect. I mean, nothing can be perfect. Perfect is like an impossible state unless you're Jesus. But
well, we're trying on the show. I just want you to know. this is a great point, though. And I think Pianki had a comment, too. But, Pianki, why don't you ask your point, and then I've got some of the things on what Brianna's hearing about discounting the Constitution, because this is interesting, too. Pianki, did you have a point?
Well, yes. One of my points is that it's very important that young people are taught and introduced to the founding documents of this country. It's very important that you look at the documentaries on the Revolutionary War, the War of 1812, the Mexican-American War, World War I, and World War II, especially, and study those military leaders like George S. Patton, Irvin Smith, Doolittle, and then you will begin to understand the trials and tribulations that this country went through, and also, in many cases, divine intervention that led us to be where we are today.
Brianna?
Yes, definitely. It's very important. There is actually a couple people at Patriot Academy that wrote bills to include many of the founding documents, and some were even like to include the citizenship test to graduate high school, or the civics test.
Yeah, I know. Bill, I know someone who wrote a bill familiar to that. Amber, your co-reporter almost here at on Fridays wrote a bill that people can't run for office until they've taken the citizenship test. And I don't know how we're going to institute that, but the idea is that we should be able to find out if people who are running for office have any knowledge of the Constitution that they're going to swear an oath to. So this is a good idea.
Yeah. And they have documents like the Constitution, the Federalist Papers, Declaration of Independence, and they have things that need to be instituted in school and that you need to learn before you graduate. And I think that's a very important thing, because if you don't understand how your country runs, what you can do to protect it, then you can't really protect yourself.
Yeah. Josie's here, but I want to keep you for a couple more minutes, and we don't have anybody for the next 2 hours at the top of the hour, so we got a little extra time. What are, you know, when you said some very interesting things, and this is very common, but I'm curious what your friends are saying, you know, that the Constitution's old, that it, you know, is written by, you know, old white guys, that it it doesn't apply anymore, that it needs to be modified, it needs to be a living document, you know, it doesn't say, you know, the things that we should have. You know, Obama was big on that. Well, it only talks about the negative. It doesn't talk about the positive. It doesn't talk about what you're entitled to. How do you handle those kinds of questions and objections?
I haven't had it personally stated to me directly by anybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's really just been stuff you see and you hear about and you learn, but of other people doing, but I've never encountered it personally.
Yeah. So, but why do you think those kind of things are out there? Because to me, there's a political objective behind it.
I think it's got something to do with the spiritual, too. In
mm-hmm.
the case of, it's pretty obvious how the world is going more and more towards sin, and people are doing more and more wrong. And so what happens is they want to be able to freely do that sin, or they have been so corrupted with society and what they're wanting that they're trying to use every excuse in the book to change it to allow them to do whatever they're wanting, whether it's right or wrong. It doesn't really matter on that to them. It's whether they want to do it, whether they think about it, what the mainstream news thinks about it. You know, if it doesn't go with that, the Constitution's got to be wrong about it. That's kind of their mindset. And if it doesn't work for them, then obviously there's something wrong with it. So then that's where they find things. Like, oh, it's outdated, and all the other excuses. But
no, it makes a lot of sense. Josie, do you have any comments or questions for Brianna?
Good morning. All I can think of in my mind is the court system is corrupt. The court system is not for the people. Before you even walk in the door, they already know if you're guilty or not. And that's, in my opinion, that's what we're facing. And they make millions of dollars daily. They're all about the money right now. The judges are super millionaires. And they're not for the people. And they haven't been in a long, long time. And now the FBI, it's not for the people. We thought they were working for us. Now they're dropping cases, investigating child abuse or child abducting. They're dropping all the cases because now they're going after the civilian people like us. And that's what they're doing. They're not for the people at all. It's
yeah,
a corruption.
That's a whole big topic, Brianna. You
judges,
might want to think about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Judges and all that, yeah. They're so corrupt. Corrupt. Yeah.
So talk about government
it's
protecting
like
government. This is a case where the government is actually reinforcing unconstitutional tyrannical power based on the fact that we don't even have a legitimate government right now.
No. No. Nope.
So,
the judges and the FBI, CIA are for the deep state, not for the U.S. citizen people to protect us and help us and work for us. They're not working for us. We're working for them. And they're coming to abuse us now. And it's
and
out
so
of control. And
so in this situation, can liberty exist, Brianna?
Of course. Liberty can exist. We just have to get rid of all of them.
We'll get Brianna back in there one more time.
House.
And then let's get, you know, absolutely. No, I agree with you, Josie. Brianna, let's get your final comment. And of course, you're welcome to stick around if you want, but I just want to make sure, get last word in. And then let's do it again next week.
All right, so I guess I'll close out the Patriot Academy. They have, if you go to the website, it's just patriotacademy.com. You can look at the programs and stuff they have. They have like constitutional defense and stuff, and they have like this class where you can learn to be a constitution coach. And I'm pretty sure you can go in person and get trained with that, but I also think there's an online way to get trained to be like a constitution coach. Which really just means that you can go and teach one of their classes and
mm-hmm.
know it and have a good understanding of how to teach it and stuff in, like, your church or a school or a group or wherever you're wanting to teach it, even if it's just at your home and you just want to learn it with your family. But they have a lot of good programs.
Okay. Hey, let me tell you, you're getting to be a much better speaker. You're just getting better at this. So keep going, keep reporting, keep doing what you're doing. But check out your some of your early recordings and compare what you're doing now. You sound fabulous. I just want to let you know.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So what I'm going to do is after Josie's report, I'm going to play our Church and State piece that I made for our own channel, which is Action Radio Founding Moments. This is where I'm going over all the founding documents, Articles of Confederation, the Church and State letter of Jefferson the Baptist. So I'll play that so you can listen to the podcast later. I'll play it about half an hour, three quarters of an hour, depending on how much time Josie has. And then you can really get an idea where that is. But go to Action Radio Founding Moments. And also, if you and Amber can get a hold of Rick Green, Patriot Academy, I want to start working with those folks. You know, we've got probably thousands of graduates of Patriot Academy that could be lobbyists for citizen legislation, you know, considering that's what they did there at the Academy. That would be fabulous to do. So let's talk off the air and see if we can work on that too. Sound good?
Sounds good.
Okay. I'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thank you.
All right. You take care. Let's bring on Josie's report. She started off as a poor child in Nicaragua, living under communism. And now she is a prosperous small businesswoman with a great family, living the dream as an American citizen. Josie Cossey knows all about both worlds, communism and freedom. She knows where your dreams can come alive and where they can die very quickly. And so her report is as much from experience as knowledge, and her passion and crusade are very real. With connections all over Central and South America, Josie brings you the world south of the U.S. border from personal experience, living, not just reporting, what's happening. And now, the Latina Report with Josie Cossey. Yeah, I got to make Brianna a theme and Amber too. We have some fabulous young reporters. I'm really impressed with,
good morning
with these
again.
Two. Good morning again. Dobre utra.
Good morning.
Buenos dias.
Dobre utra. Dobre utra.
Konnichiwa.
Yes.
Josie-san.
Yeah. Buenos dias.
Здравствуйте.
I wanted to talk about...
Hola, hola.
Hola, hola, Bianchi. ¿Cómo estás?
Aloha. We're just going to bombard you with different languages.
This is funny.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, as we're speaking, I'm getting messages from Cuba right now because I'm worried about the hurricane and all that. But the families that I know, they're on the opposite side. So she was just texting me just now from Cuba, telling me that they're okay and they're way on the opposite side. So that family are okay. But I haven't heard
from Cuba's pretty long. How long is Cuba?
Yeah.
It's a couple hundred miles long. I mean, it's not very wide, but it's very long.
I don't
long.
Know, but it's very long.
Yeah.
It's like Chile. The country of Chile is like a long little strip. I mean, very long.
Yeah,
you know?
It's the only nation that's all beachfront property.
Yeah, beautiful. Chile is so beautiful. The beaches in Chile are gorgeous. Yeah, I lived there for a couple of years.
Argentina give up that land, how did they divide up? How did they make that map? That Chile got all the coastline and Argentina is just kind of stuck in the middle. Stuck in the middle with you.
But Argentina is beautiful too, though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the mountains are gorgeous. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I need to go.
I need to go.
I don't know South America
in
at all.
Argentina.
Ooh.
Yeah. I spent a Christmas in Argentina one time, and I didn't mm-hmm. know what was going on because at midnight, all the families get out and they, you know, when a person gets married and they attach all those little cans to make all the noise, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we were in bed already in the hotel and I'm like, I'm hearing all this sound. I'm like, what's going on? And it's all the cars like in a parade at 12 o'clock midnight with all the noise. I'm like, what
That's
the
great.
Is going on? But anyway.
That's what siesta's
yeah.
for, so you can stay up late.
In the
yeah.
World.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Yeah.
And the beef, oh my gosh, the beef is excellent, and yeah.
Well, they got cowboys and ranchers. I mean, the gauchos, right? Isn't that what the South American cowboys are called?
Lots of beef, yes.
There's a
and they eat at 9, 10 o'clock at night. Oh my gosh,
really?
It's so late. And all the little children, they get to get drunk. A lot of the little kids, they're so used to because they drink that sangria or little wine. at the dinner table. And
it's
normal
juice,
for
it?
Children to have a little bit of wine. Yeah.
Wow.
So it's good. But it's beautiful. And I hate to say this, but my family were like part of the American Embassy diplomat.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're the guest, you get to eat the bull's private part. And,
oh,
you
isn't
know,
that exciting?
Yeah.
I do. Yeah.
Yes. So that's part of the
And that's an honor?
Thing. Yeah, it's ridiculous. So.
Wow.
And in Nicaragua,
well, I'm
not
a diplomat.
Mom, yeah, thank God. Well, or a guest. You don't have to be a diplomat. I'm saying if you're the guest of the party that night. And in Nicaragua, my mom, she used to cook the eyeballs of a cow in a soup. And one of
Are
the
they
families
looking at
that
you?
We went,
Are they
they're
looking,
looking
at you
at
when
you.
It's done?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
It's disgusting. Yeah. And one of the Americans traveled with me at the time from D.C., and my mom served that soup. And
eyeball
they
soup.
Were disgusted about it. I said, what is this? What an eyeball. So it's crazy. We eat everything over there.
Well, if you're poor, I mean, you look at the Asian countries,
yeah.
too. They eat everything.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, go to an Asian market in Chinatown in San Francisco. You'd be amazed what you see.
Dogs,
everything gets eaten. Oh, everything. They're all in small cages. It's horrible. You know,
yeah.
just it's an amazing, you know, Westerners have no clue. go to a market. Go to a fish market.
In Miami, they shut down a couple of restaurants in my homestead area because they were serving cat and dogs. That's why a lot of Oriental restaurants, they put so much red stuff so you can identify the meat at all.
Hmm.
I don't eat Chinese food at all. No. I learned my lesson
food.
In Miami.
But American Chinese food. This is the thing. You go to Chinatown in San Francisco,
Chinese
there are Chinese,
in America,
Chinese
yeah.
restaurants, and they're American Chinese restaurants, and they're very different.
Yes.
Yeah.
But let me talk about Cuba,
sure.
what's going on right now in Cuba, and I get feedback back and forth. I have different families in Cuba. I communicate.
Mm-hmm.
I was finally send money to Cuba. There's a scam with everything you do over there.
Mm.
But, you know, 63 and communists and the Cuban people have been suffering. But now the government is cleaning house again, like what they did back in the 80s with the Mariel boat that they sent to Miami.
Yeah.
Grandmothers and little kids and eight patients, you know, they clean house.
And criminals.
Right now, about
jails are out. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're doing the same thing again. Right now, about 200,000 people have left Cuba. And it is insane. I thought it was 120, but I was listening to a report from Cuba. It's about 200,000. And what they're doing now is they have like a package, right? They say, okay, you can go to a vacation to Venezuela or Nicaragua, but especially in Venezuela, you get a package deal, hotel, and everything. And when you get to Venezuela, they ship you back to Cuba. You don't even get to go to the hotel to put your bags, and they ship you back. So it's a big scam going on. The Cuban government is pulling because a lot of these families are struggling, selling their home. They sell everything to escape Cuba. And then when they come back, they don't have nothing. And sometimes they get tortured and murdered if they get sent from the United States by Biden administration. So a lot of the ones going to Nicaragua, they're not being returned like the ones from Venezuela. So they have to pay a little bit more for the package to go to Nicaragua. And from Nicaragua, they make it all the way here. Instead of going to the next country next to it, which is Costa Rica or Panama, you know,
right.
If you really are looking for political asylum, the first country you hit, that's the one you should be getting political asylum, refugee. But no, they all want to come here, of course. You know, how
well, because they're not here for asylum. You know, Bianca and you and I talked about this. They're here for the money.
Yeah.
You know, I was just making a little note to myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Here's a question,
mm-hmm.
though.
I heard about that. Go
when
ahead.
Trump comes back in 2024, or ideally January 21st, 2023, so he can finish out his stolen term and still be able to run for a full second term,
yes.
He's going to invalidate everything that Brandon did. But because Brandon was never president, you know, if we can get some kind of ruling on that, the geldings aren't going to help. But if we can get some kind of official status, official ruling that Brandon was never president, that means that every illegal that came in, you know, has no status and it could be just as quickly removed, which is why the geldings should be saying, don't get comfortable, you're not staying. But see, they should be telling him that now.
Yeah.
The Republicans should be saying that right now, that his commitment, you know, McCarthy's fluffy little commitment, the what I call the one-night stand promise, you know, say anything or do anything to get someone for the night, you know, that's what he's doing.
Well, even,
but there's not one mention of illegals, but they could all be sent out. Well, they could be sent out anyway. But the point is that that would make it even a stronger case. Look, he was never president. He couldn't authorize anybody to come in. Y'all got to go.
Yeah.
So pack up and leave or we're going to make your
they
life
will.
Miserable. Yeah.
Trust
okay, good.
Me.
Yeah.
They will go. They will go. Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right.
Go ahead, Bianchi.
Yeah. Bianchi?
Well, even so, they still are here illegally. No matter who's sitting in the White House, they broke the law, and the law was allowed to be broken, disregarded, to allow them to come in.
Yep.
You got to go.
No, I agree with you. And I'm just saying it would be a stronger case if it could all be declared that anything Brandon did was illegal because he was never president. He was never commander-in-chief. He could never order anybody into battle. He could never sign executive orders. He could never, you know, and I'm still not sure the status of the student loans, but there was nothing he could legally do simply because he was never president. And that should be the number one goal of the geldings. In fact, I had a comment with someone on Facebook this morning. Oh, you've got to stop telling people to not vote. I said, I'm not telling people to not vote. I'm just telling people to make the Republicans live up to being Republicans. In fact, Jesse, I'm curious your opinion. Yeah, go ahead.
Personally, I do not think we're going to have an election at all. That's my take.
Well, we didn't have one last time.
But
we had a coup.
But we have but not this time. It's going to be different. But we have an illegal president, and we have a lot of millions of illegals invading our country. That's what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They're invading our country. Our military is in it, helping the deep state, FBI, CIA, the courthouses, the court judges, the Supreme Court, everybody's in it. Like I said a few minutes ago with a young girl on the phone, this is a corruption not for the people. They're against the people. They're not for us. They're against us completely. These people go to D.C. to work, and they're nothing but a fraud, corruption, deceiving and lying to the American people, the CDC, the FDA, all of them. They want us dead. They want us dead since we're in the womb of the mother. It is out of control. Out of control. The whole thing has been going on for years and years and years, but now they're right in your face, and they don't care if you know about it or not. But it's coming to an end, all of it, and they know it, so they're panicking right now. But anyway, before I get all excited, I wanted to finish the Cuban thing. What's happening in Cuba also, a lot of times mom or dad or just dad leaves because they want to come to America, of course. You know, they go to other countries, but they ended up here eventually because they know all the goodies are free here. So parents leave the home and leave kids unattended with like a cousin or brother or uncles or grandmother. Guess what? The government they become owners of your children right now in Cuba. So they are selling kids to gays, to any couple they want, for sex trafficking or anything they want. They don't care as long as you come to Cuba and buy a child. This is what's happening in Cuba, and it is horrible what they're doing to so many families right now in Cuba.
Is this Cuban government sponsored, or is it like a cartel there, like in
Mexico? The Cuban government is doing this.
Okay.
The Cuban government is doing this right now. They're becoming owners of your children if you leave the country and then send for your child after you make a little money.
Oh, I see how it works.
Many of them do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is horrible. I have seen videos that some of the people are sending me that moms are crying here in America because their child is gone. It's no more in Cuba. Somebody took them to Europe. Somebody took them to the States or any other country. And a lot of them are child traffickers coming to buy the children.
The whole concept of buying a child, you know, and they say, and they blame the United States for slavery in the 1600s, and yet this is exactly what's going on right now. And it's always the communist countries. You know, you don't see this happening in free countries. You know, and that would include what we used to be. Yeah. Interesting.
Well,
I got a question. Go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm here.
Well, I was thinking, we were talking about the courts earlier and the idea of the courts protect the government, not the people. And that was kind of a new concept for Brianna when she was thinking about that. Nicaragua, under communism, how did the courts operate? I'm guessing the answer is that they enforced all the government policies, that there were no recourses for people, and that our courts are becoming very much like their courts.
Our courts have been like that for years and years and years. We just don't know about it.
Okay.
If it wasn't for Donald Trump, we would not know about all this deep, deep state and corruption that has been going on. It's been going on, let me tell you, for 100 and something years.
Mm-hmm. No, I believe
horrible
you.
What they're doing.
Mm-hmm. No, it's
I'm
really
learning
funny
more
when,
and more about what's going on.
Well, it's funny, when I first
You'll
came to the United
shocked.
States when I was a young teenager, my very first thought was, this is the next country for like a Nazi takeover. And I said, because at first when I realized how big the government was, I said, there's no way you can keep this in check. And I was like 12 years old, right? I'm just a kid. And I get to the United States, and I'd never been here. Well, I've been here for maybe like a day or two or a week, you know, on business or things like that. So I didn't really know that much. But once I'd been here for a short time, I started watching the news. I started getting acclimated because, you know, it's my third country, right, after Canada and Australia. And so I'm kind of brought here and dumped here. I'm thinking, okay, now where am I? You know, but I realized very quickly, I mean, the Vietnam War was still going on. I'm thinking, and I lived in Massachusetts near this massive Air Force base where the B-52s and the C-5s, the huge, you know, galaxy transports used to fly in all the time. Raytheon's up there where our alleged Secretary of Defense came from, Austin, and some of the other things. And I realized how big the government was. They build this big base. They have these monster airplanes. You know, we're at war, but we didn't see it. You know, it was a war that was unseen, and that's why they could keep it going so long. You know, the war in Afghanistan, the war in Iraq, the war in Vietnam and Korea, the reason they had them going, you know, was because nobody saw them. People just disappeared. They were gone, or they came back crippled. You know, but you didn't actually – we didn't have our cities bombed. And I looked around, and I thought, this government that can do this, that can wage a war, and nobody sees it? They have that much control? I'm thinking to myself, this – because I already studied, you know, Hitler's Germany and Japan's emperor because I lived in Australia. And in Australia in the 60s, you know, World War II was only 20 years previously. There's a lot of people when I was in Australia remember World War II, remember the Japanese in northern Australia. You know, and I talked to folks that were 20 years older than me, and they remembered. Okay, so I had a lot of firsthand accounts of what life was like in Australia that could have been under Japanese occupation. You know, it was fascinating.
And you know, Greg?
Yeah.
You know, Greg, when everything gets released, when all the truth comes out soon, which they are promising, everything will be out in the open by Donald Trump and the military and Q. When everything gets released, and supposedly JFK Jr. is going to release everything with Donald Trump, and I believe it. I believe that's why they postponed the magazine for the 22nd. I have a feeling, the gut feeling that JFK Jr. is going to introduce his magazine, because out of the blue, why is George coming back? And it is coming back because I signed a release by the lawyers of the team for my story that it's going to be there, and it's going to be October 1st. I hope they make it the deadline October 1st. But
well, that's Saturday.
All is going to come out. Yeah, all is going to come out. Everything, all the corruption of child trafficking, the vaccines, they've been injecting poison to a lot of the United States citizens 40-something years ago. Like Dr. Judy Mikovits always says, never, ever, ever take a vaccine of any type, because they've been creating autism, bipolar, schizophrenia, Alzheimer's, cancer, Parkinson's, everything. It's in the vaccines. It's in the vaccines. And I have a friend of mine. She's a pharmaceutical. Her son is a doctor. Her husband is a doctor. She has a lawyer daughter. They all took the vaccine because they believe and trust the CDC. And now the young, well, he's not that young. He's 30-something years old. The son is engaged or to marry this Jewish woman. And she's telling him, I will never, ever vaccinate my child. So they're having that argument right now, that he wants his kids vaccinated with the routine vaccines. Of course, I'm not talking about the COVID, but the routine vaccines are deadly, deadly. And we didn't even know that they've been doing this for years and years. No child in America, I mean, not that many children should have autism, cancer. I mean, back in the 60s, we barely heard about cancer. It was here and there, you know, but now everybody has cancer. three out of five people have cancer in America. And this is all well organized, the whole thing. And it's been going on for a long time, including the cheap shoes we're buying from China. It's giving us problems so we can have hip replacement and knee replacement. We never heard of such a thing in our life. You know, this is funny. I'm going to tell you.
That's okay. People are overweight now, too. But, you know, that's another big problem. Overweight causes
the food.
Hip and knee replacement.
They're poisoning our food, right?
Yeah.
They're poisoning our food with GMOs. They're trying to put all this, like the Gatorade. The Gatorade is deadly. And all the young people say, oh, Gatorade, because it's going to take care of my thirst and all this. And I stopped buying Gatorade when I found out that it's no good. It gives you cancer. So all this stuff.
Which part of it gives you cancer? Which part gives you cancer?
Because of the color that they put,
the acephrine
or whatever you call that. Yeah, it's bad.
And, well, the biggest problem is it has there's no magnesium. This is one thing we learned from our doctor's panel. There's no magnesium in Gatorade. And magnesium is the one mineral that allows you to regulate your body temperature. So they're giving you something that supposedly, you know, helps you with sports and activities. And the one thing it doesn't do is give you the one mineral that would allow you to regulate your temperature when you're engaging in sports and activities.
Yeah.
So it actually it's a negative. It actually is worse than water. You know, for many reasons, but I didn't know I gave you cancer. I have to look more into that.
But
here's a question though.
Control.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking, you know, is this by design that they're actually trying to kill all of us? Because I have a problem with that simply because the more people they kill, they'll their market share. You know, it's like the cigarette companies. I mean, you know, every time somebody dies of lung cancer, they have to find another customer to make up for that customer that they killed off. So there's
They know you're going to die eventually, but more people are being born. What's happening is if you have cancer because of them, they try to do all these chemotherapies, and they're making a lot of money. I have a friend right now that I think he's not going to make it.
I told him
to get off the stinking chemo. I talked to Dr. Judy a couple times about it. Remember, she keeps telling me, get off the chemo now.
Because the
chemo is what's really going to kill him.
Well, look up David Trombley. David's been on the show. He had a rare bone cancer. He cured it naturally. He got rid of all the poisons, you know, everything from filtering the water, you know, in the shower too. You know, I gotta get a shower filter, so I'm gradually improving. You know, I do farm fresh eggs. I don't buy eggs in the store anymore. You know, none of my stuff has GMOs in it. I don't buy really hardly ever produced food or food that has been altered in any way. It's just mostly, you know, raw fruits, vegetables, and meats that I cook. That's pretty much it. Meat, eggs, and fish.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm doing the best that I can. I'm feeling great, by the way. You've been losing weight. You know, this is kind of cool. But there are so many things you can do yourself, but people don't think about that when they buy their potato chips and, you know, hop into Burger King. And Well, my question, though,
don't eat a Burger
King
or McDonald's, whatever you do.
Oh, please don't. I used to love.
No.
I don't want to tell
you what I know, but it's ugly. No, don't
well,
eat a McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's. No, never.
Yeah.
I haven't
well,
been
the beef
to a
now.
McDonald's in 20 years.
Yeah.
20 years.
The last time I was in McDonald's was in Paris with my daughter because we were curious to see if it was the same. It was the same.
It was exactly the same.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, Greg,
uh-huh.
People in America try to lose weight, but it's almost impossible because what's in the food, you know? And I know a lot of people are having fast food because it's faster, it's good, and they don't have time. They don't want to make time. There's time to cook. I cook almost every day. The only fast food
I cook minimally.
That I go is,
you know, I mean, there's a way to do it. Like, I have enough fruits and vegetables around here that I have
me
plenty
too.
Of food that doesn't require cooking. In fact, most of my food does not require cooking. You know, and so, because I'm a single guy, I got things to do. I got a major international corporation to run. By the way. Listenership is skyrocketing in Canada, Australia, and over in Great Britain. So I want to invite my listeners, to, you know, in those countries. Listen, if you can listen live.
Online.
I know there's time zone differences. I know there's problems. But if you can listen live, use live chat. You can type in a message. Our Skype line is always on during the show. So anybody can call in using Skype. And the code is right there on our broadcast page. You know, it says, mm-hmm. where does it say it here? I'll find it. It's down there in like the mm-hmm. third section of stuff. Skype Live, you know, it's like colon.cid.fdbac53a2909de1. It's right there. It's right there. Pay. So anybody can, you know, so all these new countries, I want to get them more involved. In fact, this is a good time to announce this. And Josie, you can actually help me with this too. I'm going to start the Action Radio International News Group project. And so we're going to have mm-hmm. an international news page. So anything that you want to put on there before your report from Chile, from Argentina, from Cuba, any of those stories that reinforce. I always try and post stories that I use on the show ahead of time so people can take a look. But we're going to have an international news group that you can do a whole bunch of stuff. And Pianchi, same thing, because you report on a lot of things going on in African countries. That needs to be in this report also, anything international. I'm going to find some folks in mm-hmm. Europe to bring us more stuff. I have a Canadian reporter. We've got Jen Clark in Australia. You know, I'm sure she'll be – I'm going to talk to her about posting stuff, or if she can't, I have a couple of other friends in Australia right now. My friend Anthony, who used to live around here, lives in Zealand now. And so we're going to get the New Zealand story. In fact, I have to have him back on the show. So we've got a lot of international contacts. Just what we do mm-hmm. here. And you have international contacts as well. And so feel free to post stories, and especially even if it's a Spanish story, you know, we all have translate buttons, yeah. you know, so we can do that as well. So a lot of things happen. Hey, anyway, go ahead.
Did you know Zelensky just bought a, I don't know how many million dollar home here in Florida?
Oh, the president of Ukraine?
The president from Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, isn't that interesting? Wow. Yeah. That's why we donated. Yeah, that's why I donated so many billions of dollars. Hey, can you get a picture of that? Can you post it on our Action Radio group page?
Somebody was telling me, so I have to find out a little bit more. And he's from Florida, this guy.
Zelensky?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Somebody was telling
really?
Me he's from Florida. And the deep state put him in office. Obama, Bill Gates, George Soros, the Biden, the Clintons, Nancy Pelosi, all these scams. They put him in office. Yeah, it's
the whole
all
war is
well
a scam.
The
whole Ukraine war is a scam because we know. I mean, Colonel Doug McGregor, who's a mm-hmm. friend of the show, so like distant because he isn't on that often. But he, you know, told us that the Ukraine war, the Russia's, you know, overwhelming. You know, they're mm-hmm. calling up all these troops and things like that. But there's no way that Ukraine can win a war against Russia. That's just insane. That's just stupid to think about.
No. Well.
You know, but the thing, what they should. What do you think, Trump? What do you think Trump would have done? I think he would have called a peace summit, got Zelensky and Putin together, you know, at Mar-a-Lago, and they would have hashed out some kind of a deal. That's what I think Trump would have done.
Well, what I know, not 100%, Trump is working with Putin, destroying all the labs in the Ukraine, and they only destroyed 35, but they don't want to touch the rest of them. It's a total of 46, according to the Pentagon also, that they say, we do have 46. They haven't destroyed the rest because they want to show the world exactly what's been going on in the Ukraine. So they're keeping
that. Yeah, and I'm not a big fan of the wait until the right time, you know, theory.
Well,
here's one
come.
For you.
It will come. Just be patient.
Yeah. Oh, that's a different Zelensky.
But so far only 35 Putin destroyed. And I believe Trump sent about a couple hundred snipers, and the neo-Nazis are gone. Yeah. They've been taken care of in the Ukraine. Like I said before, if Putin wanted to take over Ukraine, they would have done it in 24 to 48 hours. Boom, 1, 2, 3, done. A lot of different villages in the Ukraine right now, they're having mm-hmm. voting in some of the villages to either stay with the Ukraine or stay with Russia. And a lot of them are choosing Russia out of their own self, not being forced by Russia, like Crimea. Mm-hmm. That's why I didn't know about it, but Crimea was the people voted to go with Russia at the time, but see, they don't tell you about it because the Zelensky government's been so corrupt, torturing and doing so many bad things to people that they couldn't stand it anymore. And that's exactly mm-hmm. what they're doing other small villages right now in the Ukraine. They're choosing to go on the side of Russia, for Russia to take care of them, because Putin has rescued so many families that you will hear later about it, from being tortured and killed, the whole family, by Zelensky's military.
Yeah.
And neo-Nazis.
Well, this is the story that people don't hear. See, I did a little research on
No, they
Ukraine.
Don't know.
Yeah, Ukraine is an interesting nation. It's divided pretty much in half by
the
Dnieper River.
The most corrupt country in the world.
Oh, absolutely. This is why the Democrats most. Always, you know, use it as a money laundering operation. But what's interesting is that the eastern half, the half closer to Europe, is much more German identified. And that's where the neo-Nazi groups are based. And then you had on the other side, you've got the western side is next to Russia. And if you look at the territory Russia has taken, it's all territory that's very strategic. It's all along the southeast corner all the way through Crimea. It's like this ribbon of land.
Crimea.
You know, it's a very interesting thing. Now, the people in the Donbas region, which is between Russia and Crimea, that southeastern part of Ukraine, are ethnic Russians. They voted to be with Russia. So this is the part that people don't get, is that there's a lot of Russian folks that say, we want to be part of Ukraine. We want to be Russia. You know, so the map is changing. Mm-hmm. So the best thing for us to do, which is always the best thing unless we're being attacked, is stay the hell out
of it. Leave them alone.
This is not our fight.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I had a thing. Well, here's the theory for you too, because you know what's going on in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
That the Putin turned off a lot of the oil. I think he turned off the Nord Stream 1, you know, pipeline to Europe, and I think he did that so that Europe would pressure the United States to stop funding Ukraine. We should do it anyway, but that's what I think. See, here's something interesting too. Putin knows how to use power. Trump knows how to use power. But, you know, the Democrats only know how to use power against Americans. They have no clue how to use power on the international, you know, side, because they don't care about that. All they care about is controlling us. So they don't care what happens in the rest of the world. But you look what's going on. Putin knows how to use power. Like him or hate him. You know, I'm not saying he's a good guy. I'm just saying he knows how to use power. And Trump does too. And that's why those two meeting, you've got two men of power who know how to use power with huge militaries at their disposal, which it's like the two biggest, you know, bullies on the block. Are they going to fight? No, they're going to talk, because they're going to kill each other otherwise. And they know it. You know, bullies only pick on smaller things, you know, and smaller people. They don't pick on each other because it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Suicide, you know, but it'd be interesting to see. But with Brandon, nobody cares about Brandon.
But you know, Greg, a lot of these countries are working with Trump right now. South Arabia, China, Russia, Italy, Greece. A lot of these countries where Trump went, there's a reason for. Oh, yeah. There's a reason for it. And I have a video that goes step by step with everything. It's pretty cool.
Right now. Yeah. Well, what about the Abraham Accords? You know, this is probably one of the greatest accomplishments of the Trump administration in foreign policy, is getting Bahrain and the United Arab Emirates and Morocco. And I think Saudi Arabia, I'm not sure what the current status is, but they didn't have peace treaties with Israel, because that would, you know, their Muslim population would go crazy, but they had economic treaties. And based on economics of trade, of airlines, of exchanges, of cooperation in all kinds of areas, these countries were getting along fine until Brandon comes back and says, we got to take a people who aren't a people, the Palestinians. There is no Palestinian state. There is no Palestinian people, folks. It's all made up. Got made up after the British, you know, declared the area Palestine, you know, after World War I. That's where all this nonsense started.
Mm-hmm.
And the land that the British declared Palestine was really Israel. So now that it's back Israel, and Israel screwed up by giving away land for peace. All they got was less land and less peace. You know, so when they talk about peace, you know, they'll take a piece of this and a piece of that. But the question now is, land for peace. Okay, we'll take this piece. Yeah, thank you. And then we'll take that piece. That's what they mean by land for peace. But the question now is, can we resurrect the Abraham Accords, you know, when Trump gets back? I would say yes. I would say this is just a bad aberration of, you know, the dark ages we have to live through with a tyrannical coup, you know, running the country, as opposed to, you know, an elected government. Because if we had an elected government, we'd have Trump, and none of this stuff would be happening. So it's like we're in an alternative universe right now. We're in a bizarre place that we shouldn't be in. We're in the wrong place. We're not supposed to be here, folks. We're not supposed to be here. You know, this should have been Trump's second term, and then DeSantis could have run in 2024 after two terms of Trump, and we'd not only be great again, we'd be amazingly great again, I think.
Hey, Ron, talking about Ron DeSantis, you know he canceled the visit here to Pensacola. He was going to be at Fish House on Saturday, and he canceled because of the hurricane. So we get a chance to see him because he's coming back,
Okay.
He's coming
back.
Well,
I don't want to see him. I want to meet. I don't want to just see him. I want to meet with him. I want to talk to him.
I met him
you know,
before. Yeah.
These little,
him
these,
and his wife.
No, but I mean really meet with him. These little meet and greets, these little selfies. You're great. You're like the selfie queen. You'll take a selfie with anybody. so funny.
Yeah, I get
if you look at our Facebook pages, yeah, Jesse's all over with, which is good because I don't care. I mean, I don't do the pictures. So
but he's coming
coming
back to Pensacola to the fish house. Yeah.
For those that don't know the Fish House, it's a big
restaurant
here on the Gulf Coast. And it's like the Fish House, Joe Patty's, and there's a couple of others. Massive restaurants. You know, if you want Louisiana shrimp, you want tarpon and amberjack and red snapper and all those wonderful things that we come into the Gulf, these are the restaurants we go to.
Very busy, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
they should be supporting us, too, after that plug,
well,
shouldn't they? I mean, they should be, you know, hey, Fish House, do you hear that?
Contact
my secretary.
I only go once in a while. Like
I don't
if
have
it's
a
big group or something like
okay.
that. Cause I always forget about it, to be honest with you. But
but
it's crazy. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm kind of done with my report, but if you want to talk about anything else, I can stay until about 8:30.
Well, let me actually, we have some time here. I got some things I want to get into. What do you think of the fact that our audience is expanding throughout the English-speaking world, you know, Australia, Canada, and England? Are just going crazy right now.
It's awesome.
Let me put it this way. We used to have about 96% of our audience 6 months ago was American and 4% the rest of the world. So it was always dominating, you know, by American. Now it's down to like 89 and dropping percent American. So we've lost like the U.S. has lost about 7% of the share, which means we're gaining a lot more listeners in other places. I don't think we're losing listeners here, but we're gaining so many more because they want freedom. Freedom works. It just does. Yeah. Well, let's get into the globalist stuff. Go ahead.
And if, and if George allows me, because I put it on my story, the thank you, writeyourlaws.com. You helped me write my ID fingerprints.
Yeah.
I haven't heard if they're going to reject it or not, but if it comes, you're going to be famous worldwide because George, everybody's like,
Okay, that's fine.
Well, about the magazine coming out.
Fame is kind of a weird thing. I don't need to be known for worldwide, but the show and the bills need to be known for us to be effective. So it's not, you know, but I want to make that point in case anybody, you know, is wondering, are we doing this for our own, you know, gratification, our own, you know, ego? No. You know, we need to be famous, we need to be known, we need to have multi-millions of listeners worldwide because that's the only way we're going to have the effect that we need to have. Let me give you a quote right here, and then I'm going to take a quick break. There's a quote that really sums things up. It sums up the title of the show today. The title of the show today, for those who haven't read the banner, The Globalists in Europe and Here Versus Us. I prefer us. So Marine Le Pen, who should be president of France, but I think that election was stolen, much like Trump's was stolen, said the divide is no longer between the right and left, but between the patriots and the globalists. And I absolutely agree. That's where we are. So let me play a couple things here. Go ahead, Jesse.
The election from Israel was stolen also. So is the one from Chile. So is the one from Colombia. So is the one from Mexico. It's all well organized. This whole thing by our government. Our government is behind this whole thing.
Well, is it our government or is it the globalists? Because it all seems to be the same pattern.
George Soros,
Bill
Gates are in it. Deep state.
Yeah, but it's the same pattern. They demonize the opposition. They call, you know, whoever is whether it's Nigel Farage in England, or Marine Le Pen in France, whether it's Giorgio Meloni in Italy, whether it's Donald Trump here, whether it's anybody. Around the country in the free countries, they always say the same thing. They're racist, sexist, homophobe, you know, whatever it is. They make all these ridiculous accusations. Then they have this obligatory sex scandal. Oh, they slept with an underage, whatever, you know. And then they have that, and they do the same old things. And then they have some crime, you know. Well, they stole money, or they accepted money, or you know, in the case of Trump, well, Russia owns him. Oh, please give me a break, you know.
Yeah.
And so, but it's the same pattern. And then they use voting machines, and then they have mail-in ballots. And then they stuff the ballots, and then they have the counters, you know, block off all the observers. I mean, this happens in every country. It's exactly the same pattern. And yet our gelding Republicans want us to vote for them, and they've never done anything to correct the election. Why should we vote for them? Give me a good reason.
Well, I'm not voting.
Well, that's
this
interesting.
I don't think, unless when I see getting closer, that it is going to happen, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to be voting this November at all.
Okay, so
we're
that's different.
Be in a
chaos. If it's able to be voting, I'm going to vote. But the problem I have is that the Geldings, mm-hmm. that's the GOP folks, the Gelding Old Party, that the Gelding Old Party mm-hmm. is in the perfect position to be losers because they're going to take Congress. I mean, I'm pretty sure, assuming the election goes forward, they're going to get the House, they're going to get the Senate, and they're going to mm-hmm. be really happy because Brandon's still going to be in the White House. So if they get rid of Brandon, if Trump comes back in for the remaining 2 years, less one day of his term, and the
what
Republicans
do you mean
have
if?
Control of...
He is coming. You keep saying
okay,
if.
Okay, well, let me keep it in – that's fine. I'm going to love it to happen. Let me just keep it in my terms until I see a little more evidence. But let's say if Trump comes back, you know, January 21st, 2023, he will serve less than 2 years, and according to the 22nd Amendment, that means he can run again in 2024. That's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not giving away any secrets,
plan.
Folks. Trust me, the Democrats already
that's
read
the
Constitution.
Plan.
Okay, so that's good. So then I came up with it by accident. Yeah. That's interesting. All right. So
I've been telling you for a long time that he's coming back.
Well, I know, yeah. But you never said when.
Towards the end of this year, he's going to announce that he's coming back.
Okay.
Yeah.
But he has to. How is he going to do it then? How is he going to do it?
I don't know the plans that they have, but they are.
Okay. So this is where I get skeptical.
What
okay,
he's been told that he'll be back.
Okay.
Yeah, he'll be back.
Yeah. See, but
two
you
years
have to do it.
Run for 2024.
But you got to do it legally, though. Mm-hmm. How are you going to do it legally? The way you do it legally is you cancel the Brandon electors, you disqualify them because they're a bunch of frauds. You then certify the Trump electors, and this is all legal. It's all constitutional. In fact, that's what January 6th was all about. See, you know the left only has one fear, and that's the Trump electors. Because they know the Trump electors are still out there. They're trying to get them arrested. They're trying to get them discredited, decertified.
Exactly.
They're trying to do everything they can. And why would they do that? Well, because they know the
That's
Trump electors can
do.
Kick Brandon out of office at any time. But they also know that the Geldings are so scared of their own shadow, they're not going to do it. This is why I have no use for Republicans. See,
Greg,
go ahead.
The Democrats know that he's coming back. They already know that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they want to arrest him. That's
well, yeah, we know that too.
They
well, they don't
want,
even want him running. Well, here's one of my Facebook quotes. I said, America would be great again if the GOP and the Democrats switched ideologies because the Democrats know how to fight and they are dedicated. So if we could just switch the ideologies, if Democrats fought with Republican principles, we'd have a great country. But unfortunately,
yeah, and they don't fight.
No,
yeah.
The Democrats are fighting for Marxism and they're winning because the Geldings have given up. So us patriots, conservatives, independents are losing. It's really sad.
Yeah.
All right.
You
Let me play a couple things. Yeah, go ahead. Then I'll
it's
take
all
a quick
coming,
break here.
So just be patient. My stomach is kind of like nervous because we only have a few months left.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be crazy. Going to be a big, going to be the shock of the world coming up.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have a few good qualities, but one of them is not patience. that's not even in my vocabulary. Yeah, I want it, you know, now because I see every day. Well, see, now we can't have Trump come back. Now, for those, like I say, think I'm giving away secrets that the Democrats are going to suddenly discover the 22nd Amendment. No, trust me. They already know. They already know. And what they're going to try and do is say, well, Trump's going to come back. He has to come back January 20th. That way he can't run in 2024. And so my answer to that is, you know, you stole the election. You're a bunch of traitors. You don't get to make that decision. We put Trump back in when he's going to – at a point where he can run again in 24 because you stole his term. So if you'd been nice people, he would have been out, but he didn't.
They're going to present all the evidence, and that's what they're trying to steal, the evidence that Donald Trump has, which is laptops from Nancy Pelosi from January the 6th. Donald Trump mm-hmm. has them. And
yeah,
the flash drive
he's probably
from,
got a,
the flash drive
he's probably
from
got,
Putin.
With
50 all the
copies scattered around the world.
Clinton.
Nah. He's, look,
yeah.
If he's any decent person with evidence, he's got it scattered in 50 different places around the world under several lockboxes, security deposit boxes,
definitely.
Obscure banks and friends around the world. I mean, if he's any kind of person with any kind of knowledge, which he is, he's got all the evidence scattered so far. No January 6th, you know, pack, as we called it.
Hey,
I
was watching a video, like when a president leaves, they take all their personal paperwork while they were during presidency and all that. And I think Bill Clinton has his storage in some old, in the trunk of a car, an old car. And then
no, he's got 30 million documents that he won't put into his library. Oh, no, so Clinton. No, I think I'm thinking of Obama. Obama hasn't had his presidential library built because he doesn't want people to know what he did.
What
well, no,
he
sure,
did.
Library.
And
Brandon,
then another president.
Yeah.
Greg,
Brandon's not
going to
have a library. He's going to have a room. Yeah.
No, he's going to be in jail. Another president, he can bring him together to Gitmo with him and read him over and over. Another president, I think it was George W. Bush, the old man, I think he had his in a skating ring, like right behind where they put all the shoes, you know, to rent the shoes, the rental. There was a special area right there, and all his papers were hiding right there.
I don't know anything about that. I've never heard that. I would think that would have been Kennebunkport, Maine, you know, in a boat, one of his cigarette boats, but that's not a story.
Yeah, they've been hiding in different areas. Their paper is crazy. I was like, what? Yeah. Those important papers, you're going to keep something, but anyway. All right.
Well,
I'll be listening.
Okay. Well, let me take a break then. And yes, feel free to listen away. I'm going to get into some of the operations across the pond that we haven't heard about.
So if I have any question, I'll come up.
Yeah, just jump back in. Pianki's been mute for a while too. I'm kind of surprised, but we've sort of been hashing stuff out, but that's okay.
You awake?
All right,
Pianki.
Set. He's there.
Are you awake, Pianki?
Yeah, Pianki, you awake? Unmute. You there?
Yeah, I'm awake.
Okay.
Woken awake.
That sounds good. All right. Okay, you go back and mute.
I'm going to mute myself.
I'm going to play some stuff. I'll be back here in a little bit here. Here at Action Radio, we are looking for sponsors. We have 30 and 60-second spots available for your announcements. And we have 3-minute live call-ins to talk about your products and services available. Action Radio is the next evolution beyond talk radio. Join us and let us help your business evolve. Think about being a sponsor of the future and not just a listener, and help us help your business grow as you help us plunge headlong into breaking new ground here on Action Radio every day. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engines. From addiction to achievement, that is the story of Mike Lindell. It started with MyPillow and now goes to MyCoffee. Action Radio is proud to be an affiliate of MyPillow. Our discount code is the same for all our product affiliates, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws. MyPillow pillows are guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. Action Radio is guaranteed to be the most controversial show you will ever hear. Check out their products with our discount code at MyPillow.com/WYL. That's MyPillow.com/WYL. Or order now by calling 1-800-544-8939. That's 1-800-544-8939. Sleep well so you can wake up and hear Action Radio live. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Great Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is greatcare.com. That's GRAITH care.com. You can email them at greatcare.adm@gmail.com. or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Great care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try, even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. Joe Biden's Dark Winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country. Action Radio. Part of the ADHD Radio Network. The ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news! Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
Wow. That sounds pretty good. Yeah, I want to be a part of that.
Anyway, because of the nature of today's international show, I hit upon the idea last night to start the Action Radio International News Group. And so I'm going to create that group after the show today. And so anybody that has international stories, if you're an international listener, you know, you can post stories, join the group. It's going to be a public group. And depending on how it goes, how soon I have to put post approval, depending on stories. And so if we can keep it open, you know, with good stuff, but it never lasts. There's always someone that, you know, kind of messes it up and I have to put the post approval on and have to make everybody join, all that kind of stuff. That's just the nature of Facebook, because there are trolls out there, and that's just the way it goes. So I think almost every group I have now, unfortunately, I have to have post approval, and I have to really, really sit on top of things so that it doesn't get out of control, off mission, off base. And you know, especially our specialty groups, people are crossing over and posting things from, and they're posting in the wrong group. You know, I constantly have to go, no, that's the wrong group. Post in this group. Oh, okay, fine. Thanks, Greg. You know, so that happens. Anyway, we've got whether we like it or not, we're kind of in a war with the globalists. It's basically us and them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like we the patriots versus them the globalists. And I think I hear something. So someone, Jesse, you might have unmuted yourself. I think I hear you in the background.
Yes.
Oh, there we go. Okay, yeah.
I like that Joe Biden thing that you play. Man, I was laughing.
Well, I play that. I've done it a few times. I actually made that.
I haven't
before.
Heard it.
Well, let me. I'll play it for you again. Yeah. So I made this before the election
in
2020.
To, but I'm saying it's good.
Okay, we can catch the podcast then. Yeah. Well, thank you. Yes. I mean, remember, like I say, it's time to get off your butt and save your country. Throw that in there at the end. But yeah. But it's everything that I was afraid of that would happen if Biden stole the election. So I think I made this maybe September, October, somewhere in there of 2020. And I said, look, this is what's going to happen, folks. You know, it's like I had this prediction. In fact, I'll play you my Christmas, you know, greetings that I bring out every year. I made that like 3 years ago too.
I thought it was a new one, correct?
Which one? The Biden one? No.
I heard that one before, but okay. I guess I didn't pay attention because I thought you said something about Space Force. You don't have control of Space Force. Is that what you said in this one?
Space Force?
No.
Well, let me play it again real quick. It's only 45 seconds.
Let me see. If it's the old one, I heard it before, but maybe I didn't pay attention.
Oh, Biden's Dark Winter. Yeah, this is what this one's called. It's 43 seconds. Let me play it again because it's so good. I mean, I'm proud of this. I like this one. This is my election prediction. This is made – now, remember, this was made before the election was stolen by a good couple of months. So this is what I made.
Joe Biden's Dark Winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country.
Yeah.
Good.
And all that came to pass.
Yeah. This,
scary,
I
huh?
heard it before. Yeah. I don't know for okay. some reason. I thought I heard a little something. It must be a new one. But anyway, no, I heard this one many times.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, but that, the Space Force is definitely in there, you know, because I don't think we have a Space Force. Well, what's interesting, though, is that the NASA folks are all excited that they rammed an asteroid with one of our satellites, you know, and they're so happy. We hit an asteroid. Oh, boy. I'm like, okay, well, that's pretty cool, actually.
But
you know,
Donald Trump
moved fast.
Mm-hmm. Donald Trump is in full control of Space Force, and he's tracking every move that Antifa is doing in Black Lives Matter and the illegals. Oh, yeah.
Using Space Force?
Yes. Definitely, yes.
Oh. Well, why doesn't he use the lasers and zap the Mexican cartels and just kill them all and end this problem? I'm serious.
No,
what's the point of having a space force if we don't use it?
No, he's gonna do something, trust me.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I do with it. It's that accurate. We got drones, too. We could go to all the Mexican cartel hangouts and just kill them all and say, look, or give them a warning. Say, look, you guys, you got to leave the Mexican border. Any cartel members left on the border after this hour, you know, you'll be dead. And they'll be like, ha, 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 yeah, right, okay, fine, yeah. Okay, well, we warned you.
Crazy.
I think it makes sense. I mean, if we can kill ISIS, why can't we kill the cartels? They're on our border. They're killing our people with fentanyl. They're bringing in hundreds of thousands of people an hour or whatever. You know, it's a lot of people. I just made that up. But the point is they are a foreign invading army that's causing an invasion just as much as the people in Washington are our domestic terrorist group. You know, the Democrat Party has become a domestic terrorist group. You know,
Greg, our government has created the war, WAR, the times that we had World War One, World War Two, creating all this chaos, and a lot of dead soldiers when they come back in the coffins, those coffins are full of opium, hashish, and all type of different drugs from the Middle East or from Ukraine or from any country. They fill
from
those
Turkey,
boxes full.
From Iran.
Yeah, from Turkey too. Yeah.
It's the opium, the poppies, you know. I mean, there's a reason that World War One, the flower, the symbol of World War One was the poppy. You know, it's from all the opium that's in the other countries. Yeah.
And this government for years, they've been bringing themselves the drugs to get the American people addicted to it. So they
of
don't
course.
Know their mind is in another world. And now they're doing the phones. So all the children are addicted. Some of the children are killing their parents because of the phones. And if you notice, you know, Greg, I was up till 3 a.m. last night, and I was reading some of your things on your page. And I guess in 2021, you posted the Pope was saying that people love dogs more than children and blah, blah, blah. It was a whole article that you put. And you know what? He's absolutely correct. You know, I don't agree with the Pope with a lot of stuff because he's a criminal. But he's right. They've been depopulating our countries and replacing them with dogs. Because my niece in Miami, she says, oh, no,
I got my baby right here. I said, what baby? He said, my little doggy. I'm not having no kids. So that's the
I think you got a couple of different issues going here. People that call their dogs kids have never had kids. That's first of all. But secondly, the replacement, they talk about the great replacement. In other words, the left says, well, that white people are afraid that, other colors of people are going to be here and take over. No, that's not the great replacement. The great replacement is aborting American babies and bringing in illegal aliens to have alien babies and call them citizens. That's the great replacement. You know, the great replacement
is
freedom with Marxism. The great replacement is a constitutional government with a coup. You know, the great replacement is people that are duly elected with elections that are stolen. That's the replacement. That's the real replacement.
Yeah.
Let me talk about what's going on in Europe, because I think it's fascinating. And I made a post that, although I think it's slightly inaccurate now because I have a different view of the British prime minister, but I posted this yesterday too. Conservative British prime minister, likely so for Italy, Trump in 2024, the 80s are back. You know, so it seemed to me that we're entering a time similar to what happened in the 80s when you had Margaret Thatcher in England, you had Ronald Reagan here, and you had Pope John Paul II, you know, the good pope. I think he's been made a saint now, or he's on his way to becoming a saint.
Think none of them have been good.
Well, that's fine.
Money laundering from the Vatican.
But when it comes to freedom, you know, you can't beat John Paul. And also I put Lech Walesa of Poland, who started Solidarity, the dock workers union that eventually led to a free Poland and kicked the communists out. So there's some pretty amazing people. Václav Havel of Czechoslovakia, who was a poet, who went on to become either prime minister or president of Czechoslovakia, which is now the Czech Republic and Slovakia. So they split. So there have been some amazing people. But this is all the 80s. Because this is all what happened in the 80s. And it seems to be happening again. So you look at world events. You know me. I look for patterns. I see what's going on where and try and relate all these things together. Why are we having audiences grow in Canada, Australia, and Great Britain? Well, because those places are now going fascist. You know, you've got a tyrannical and COVID. COVID's the reason. COVID is the excuse for taking your rights away. See, COVID's not a problem. 99.95% of the people are fine with it.
COVID
even if you get it.
COVID's
not the problem. Yeah. Well, the problem is government policy, you know, using COVID as the excuse. That's the problem. And the hospitals kill people because they make $130,000 per death. That's the problem.
One of my doctor friends dances with me at Sacred Heart, and she wasn't too happy because we started talking about the vaccine with another Oriental girl from Taiwan, I guess, whatever, from Taiwan, actually.
I don't think Taiwan has a mandatory vaccine
or
ever did.
My friend asked her, she said, so you still believe in the vaccine? She said, I fully believe in the vaccine. I'm going, yeah, the vaccines are killing everybody, I said. So she was not too happy about that.
Isn't it interesting to believe in it? You know, they always put it in religious terms. Do you believe in climate change? Do you believe, do you believe the government's your God? Well, no. Anyway, I found something interesting. This is from a reporter, Kyle Becker, B-E-C-K-E-R. He has a newsletter called the Wildfire Newsletter.
Greg, I'm going to mute and listen because I have to get ready. My girlfriend had a stroke, and I'm going to go to the hospital and see her. So.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
did she have a COVID
shot?
She's
not vaccinated. She's not vaccinated, though.
Well, there's probably a lot
of
that.
I'm going to be listening, and I'll jump on in a minute, okay?
Okay. Sounds good.
I'm going to mute. Okay.
All right. So I'll carry on. Pianki's still here. He's mute, too, but muted. I shouldn't say mute. Sorry, Pianki. But what's interesting, again, there's some people emerging in Europe. Again, the people I mentioned earlier, Nigel Farage in England, he's the one that spent, I think, 14 years trying to get Brexit, which was the exit of Britain from the European Union, which is a tyrannical globalist government organization that controls other sovereign peoples and sovereign governments with all kinds of rules, regulations, taxes, and other stuff, and they do that at Brussels. It's interesting that the NATO headquarters and the European Union headquarters are – really close to each other in Brussels. I don't think that's an accident. I mean, I would get out of NATO too. So the people that have emerged, Nigel Farage in England, Marine Le Pen in France, and this new woman who I'm just starting to get to know, Giorgia Meloni in Italy, is now the prime minister. And what's very predictable, scary, and yet too many people believe it, is they say, and even Fox News, one of their people said this, which really shocked me, but it shouldn't, said that this is the most right-wing government since World War II in Italy. Well, Italy didn't have a right-wing government in World War II, folks. Excuse me. Italy had a fascist government in World War II, headed by Benito Mussolini. In fact, a couple of years ago, I went over the entire fascist doctrine of Mussolini. I spent 2 days on it. Okay, so you can go by, look at Mussolini. If you look at the top of your broadcast page, or if you're listening, you know, the podcast is there too. Go to the top of the podcast page, and you'll see a search window. Put in there, you know, Mussolini, Action Radio, and you'll get our two shows. We described exactly what Italian fascism was, and it's absolute government corporate control of everything. So the government controls the corporations, and the corporations, both the government and the corporations, control the people. Kind of like what we have here. You know, the corporations that had all the mandates on these bogus COVID shots, that was fascism. That's a government-corporate merger. Anytime you have that, you have fascism. That is the exact opposite of the right wing. You know, I don't even like saying right wing, but conservatives, independents, patriots, people that believe in God and country, nationalists. And I say nationalists, you know, with the true meaning of nationalism, not the meaning that the left wants to give to it, because the left wants to strip you of your identity, wants to redefine everything you believe, wants to take away everything you believe, so the only thing left is to believe in them. Well, it's not going to work. We're not going to do it. We're not going to submit. We're going to keep resisting. So, you know, basically F you, okay? We're going to do what we do here, and we're going to do what people are doing around the world. And part of that is that you have to gravitate around somebody that's actually standing up and willing to take the slings and arrows, as they say, that of all the persecution of the leftists. So you got to be – Trump's willing to do that. I'm willing to do that. Everybody on this show is willing to do that because we do it every day. We stand up and say, here's what we think. And we're standing up and being counted. And if the FBI, KGB wants to call in and talk to me, just do it. 215-383-3832 is my daily invitation. You know, if you're going to drop over, warn me so I can make coffee. You know, we can talk, okay? Let's be civilized about this. Back to the article. So the Wildfire Newsletter with Kyle Becker talks about Giorgia Meloni, and she's fascinating. I just learned about her this week. It says, one listen to Italy's new prime minister, and you'll know why the global establishment fears her so much. So that's a good thing. I want the global establishment to fear. I want those people quaking in their boots. I want there to be so many freedom-seeking people around the world that these people get nowhere, that the Davos group, that, you know, what's his name, Klaus Schwab, you know, is just has no effect whatsoever, that we laugh at these people, that they say, yes, we're going to unite the world under us, yeah, and just shall have no property, and you'll be happy, and you'll live in a global community, and you'll have a government job, you'll have government transportation, you'll have government entertainment, government food, and you'll be happy. No, we won't. So the article says, here's the quote from Giorgia Meloni. She says, we will defend it. We will defend God, country, and family. And that's the things they're all – notice that's what they want to take away from you. The globalists, they want to take away God. They want to take away your country, saying that nationalism is bad. Nationalism is a good thing. Look at the great nationalists. You know, our founding fathers were nationalists. You know, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who fought World War II. You know, was a nationalist. You know, John Kennedy, who got us to the moon, was a nationalist. The reason I'm saying this is because they're Democrats. Okay, Democrats used to be nationalists. Harry Truman was a nationalist. Okay, Scoop Jackson, you know, more recently, you know, who was a Democrat, was big into supporting our military, was a nationalist. Okay, Trump is a nationalist. He's in good company, all the way back to Thomas Jefferson, George Mason, you know, James Madison, and Thomas Jefferson. They're all nationalists. That's a good thing. God is where our rights come from. That's a good thing. Family, although my experience wasn't that great, but family as a building block for society is a good thing. And this is what these people are talking about. So the Marxists, in order to get you to worship them, to believe in them, to give up everything you know, they have to strip you of your identity. They strip you of God, they strip you of country, and they strip you of family. They have to as a prerequisite for you to believe in them. Well, we don't believe in them. Anybody with a brain does not believe in Marxists or this collective. The collective is not a good thing. Every accomplishment that's ever of any kind of value starts with an individual. Take a look at any invention, any idea, any progress, any political theory, anything of value that has advanced humanity forward, it's always started with an individual. That's why individual rights are so paramount. Everything happens with an individual. You know, Action Radio started with an individual, me. But am I great for myself? No. What makes Action Radio great is everybody else is here. Okay, so an individual starts it, but an individual never finishes it. Okay, this is how these things work. Okay, so as we start a peaceful revolution here, you know, more and more people around the world are going, yeah, I want freedom. I want to write the laws that I'm governed by. Why not? That's a revolutionary concept. Okay, I started it because it was my idea. But it goes from there to everybody else around the world that says, you know, I like that idea. Let's do that here. And we had a bill writing thing last week where Linda Milkus, and hopefully we'll have her back, you know, private citizen, regular person, wrote a bill banning drug advertising. Dr. Judy Mikovits, world-renowned biochemist, microbiologist, you know, I got these two together and they wrote a bill banning drug advertising. Well, where else can that happen? That never happens. This is brand new. This is cutting edge. This is pioneering stuff. But this is what we do here. And we do this to counter the globalists. They want to take away our humanity, take away God, take away our country, take away our family, take away our rights, take away everything we believe in. So the only thing left to believe in is them. And I'm telling you now, it's not going to work. It's simply not going to work. We are not going to let you do what you want to do. I'm sorry. That's just the way the world is. Get over it. So back to Kyle Becker. He says, Georgia Maloney stunned the global political establishment when her populist nationalist Fratelli d'Italia, that's the Brothers of Italy, Fratelli d'Italia, to work on my Italian, okay, swept into power on Sunday. So she's there. She's already in, okay? So what do they say about her? Oh, they said she's a fascist. She's like Mussolini. No, she's the exact opposite of Mussolini. She's a patriot and an individual and a freedom-seeking individual. Mussolini was just the opposite. So you got to get over this big lie that there's such a thing as a right-wing dictatorship, because there isn't. All dictatorships are by definition left-wing. Because all dictatorships require absolute government power to do what they want to do. This is why all white supremacists are leftists, because white supremacists require absolute government power to do what they want to do to all the people that they don't like who aren't white. That's how you can tell a white supremacist. They're leftists, because a white supremacist who's just an anarchist is just going to run around screaming and yelling and nobody's going to care. Okay, fine. I mean, they're those people too, but they're not going to have any effect. The only people that have effect as white supremacists are leftists, because they organize tyrannical government power. The best example were the Nazis, the Aryans, that killed millions of people, not just 6 million Jews, but they killed millions of people who they thought that they were superior to, because they had a dictatorship behind them, a left-wing dictatorship. Hitler and the Nazis were leftists. Mussolini and the fascists are leftists. Stalin and the communists are leftists. They're all leftists. Once you understand that, everything else makes sense. See, I'm kind of on a roll here. Feel free. I got to take a breath soon, but this is just coming out. This is not planned. This is just me. All right. What's that?
You left me two left and a right back behind me.
What are you listening to besides me? There's something in the background there.
My computer talks to me from time to time. It's confused. Yeah. It's trying to keep up with you too.
Do you have like Marilyn Monroe's voice there? Bianchi, it's time to switch screens. You should get Marilyn Monroe to talk out of your computer. That'd be funny. All right. Feel free to jump in. But this stuff makes me so mad. I don't know what else to do. The article says, as the World Congress of Families in March 2019, at the World Conference, of Families in March 2019, Maloney unleashed a sweeping indictment of the globalist war on national, religious, and family identity. Her electrifying speech has captured the imagination of international observers craving ideologically based pushback to a culturally hegemonic regime that aims to strip human beings of their personal identities and render them no more than numbers for the global ruling class to manipulate. I think that's what I said. I'm just reading this now, right? But I think that's pretty much what I said. Yeah, let me go over that again. That's really good. Her electrifying speech, that's Giorgia Meloni, Prime Minister of Italy, speech captured the imagination of international observers craving, I guess that would be me as an international observer, craving ideologically based pushback to a culturally hegemonic regime that aims to strip human beings of their personal identities and render them no more than numbers for the global ruling class to manipulate. I'm the number. Hey, Bianchi, do you remember the show with Patrick McCougan, The Prisoner? Where they had this white bubble that used to entrap people and suffocate them, and then they end up in this strange, unusual place, a British political thriller. And Patrick McCougan was the prisoner. He had a number. You know, they all had numbers. In fact, there was no identity. Nobody knew who they were, where they were. There was no record of them being captured or arrested, and they were there for as long as they were there. And it was a series called The Prisoner. Pianki, you remember
they
that?
They only had knives. No, I don't remember that one. They only had numbers, huh?
Yeah, they only had numbers, yeah. And in fact, look at The Prisoner. Go to YouTube and listen to the original theme. And he says, I'm a man. I am not. I am a free man. I am not a number. So all this stuff's been foretold. You look at The Twilight Zone, the early Star Trek episodes, you know, The Prisoner, Doctor Who, all these different series back from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. They're all concerned with freedom because they all saw what was coming. You know, a lot of us, but we just didn't know when. Anyway, let me get back to this thing here. It says, one listen to the future Italian prime minister, and you will quickly come to understand why the global elites fear her so much. Now, I've got the video here, but I've got this post on my Facebook page. It's also on the Action Radio group page. So if you want to go, and it will be in, and this is why I'm starting the Action Radio International News Group. And the reason I'm doing that is because of this show today. And so that's how things work around here. So Greg Price, I'm not sure who he is. He says, this is Italy's new prime minister, Giorgia Meloni. And there's a video there. You just have to play it. But I have the text of it here. She says, please answer me these questions. This is about what we are doing here today. She says, why is the family an enemy? Why is the family so frightening? There is a single answer to all these questions because it defines us, because it is our identity. Because everything that defines us is now an enemy for those who would like us to no longer have an identity and to simply be perfect consumer slaves. And so they attack national identity. They attack religious identity. They attack gender identity. They attack family identity. I can't define myself as Italian, Christian, woman, mother. No. I must be citizen X, gender X, parent one, parent two. I must be a number because when I am only a number, when I no longer have an identity or roots, then I will be the perfect slave at the mercy of financial speculators, the perfect consumer. That's the reason why. That's the reason why we inspire so much fear. That's why this event inspires so much fear, because we do not want to be numbers. We will defend the value of the human being, every single human being, because each of us has a unique genetic code that is unrepeatable. And like it or not, that is sacred. We will defend it. We will defend God, country, and family. That's what she said in this video. It's amazing. So just to substitute my voice for this, you know, Kathleen Turner kind of husky-voiced Italian, you'll hear her voice in your head. Yeah, she goes on a little bit further. I'll get this more to the speech. She says, these things that disgust people so much, we will do it to defend our freedom because we will never be slaves and simple consumers at the mercy of financial speculators. Oh, this is repeating what she said before. Then she says, Chesterton wrote more than a century ago, fires will be kindled to testify that two and two makes four. Swords will be drawn to prove that leaves are green in the summer. She says, that time has arrived. We are ready. Thank you. So, let's go over that G.K. Chesterton, British philosopher. You know, you've heard of the 2 plus 2 is 4, which Orwell adopted in 1984 when he said 2 plus 2 is 5. If you can make people believe that 2 plus 2 is 5, you can make them believe anything. Because people intrinsically know that 2 plus 2 is 4, but they can be coerced into saying 2 plus 2 is 5, and then eventually they say it often enough, they believe that 2 plus 2 is 5, even though they used to know instinctively that 2 plus 2 is 4. That's the essence of propaganda and control. When you say 2 plus 2 is 5 and you believe it, the government has you. That's what the Matrix is all about, the blue pill versus the red pill. Every movie, every book, everything that ever decided, that ever described the difference between a totalitarian society and a free society talks about things like that and how the government gains control. Look at the Hunger Games. Look at Divergent. Look at, you know, we'll talk about more recent things that have come out of Hollywood in the last not too long. But the time has arrived. So it says fires will be kindled to testify that two and two makes four. So yeah, it's a revolution to say the truth. You have to have a revolution to say what's truth. Swords will be drawn to prove that leaves are green in the summer. So in other words, obvious things that we all know, 2 plus 2 is 4, leaves are green in the summer. We have to defend our most basic beliefs against these globalists that are telling us 2 plus 2 is 5 and leaves are brown in the summer. You know, they're telling us that climate change exists. It doesn't. Well, climate change does exist, but not the way they're saying. You know, that CO2 is bad for us when we all know it's plant food. You know, that that Brandon is really the president. We all know he stole the election. So all these things they try and force on us, and unfortunately, there's enough multitudes through out of fear and the this mass psychosis event that we're going through are actually believing and repeating this stuff. Look at all the Karens that yelled at people in New York and New Jersey and up. They saw those videos. You know, you have to wear a mask. They were screaming at people, get out of the store. You're not wearing a mask. You're going to kill us all. That's irrational behavior. But they all had bought into it. They drank the Kool-Aid, took the blue pill, believed everything they were told, and became servants of the government. They became slaves to the government. They gave up their humanity, their personality, their identity, their mind, their logic, and their reason, and they became followers. They became Karens. Just imagine a huge, massive field of lemmings running off a cliff, all with Karen branded across the side. That's who these people are. that the mob is scary, you know, and the mob gets controlled by the propagandists because they're organized. And so what we're saying very clearly is the globalists, no, you don't have a place here. Ain't going to happen. We have no use for you at all. Whew. Okay, I'm done. Pianchi, I need a drink of water. I'm going to take a break for a second. I'll let Pianchi. Then I have another article on Giorgia Meloni, who's kind of like my feature person for the show today. Oh, Pianchi's not here. I will continue on. Anybody else want to join us, feel free.
Hey, Greg.
Yeah, Josie, how am I doing?
I'm here. Yes, very good. I was trying to finish my hair here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, finish your hair.
I like that woman you were reading about her. She's good. She's good. She's going to win.
She's blonde now, too, by the way. She's changed
her
look a little bit. Yeah, that's kind of funny. I don't think of Italian blondes. It's kind of interesting to see an Italian blonde. It's just, it sort of defies the stereotype.
Yeah. Women color their hair, so a lot of Latino when they come here, they want to be blonde. You know, not me. I want to be a Latina.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah.
What's wrong with brown hair and brown eyes? It looks gorgeous. You look fabulous, by the way.
I know. I like brown hair.
Yeah,
and,
I do too.
A lot of Spanish people, they get to America and they want to be blonde. So it's just nah, no, thank you.
Yeah, it's really funny when I took a cruise with my kid. I took her down to Mexico. We swam with dolphins. We did the this is back when we were in California. We did the Mexican Riviera, Puerto Vallarta, Cabo San Lucas, and Mazatlan.
Puerto
Vallarta. I'll work on my accent. Anyway, I remember we were on this island, and we got this. We took this little boat over to this island. And the guy with the conch shell, you know, blasted the horn, and we went to dinner. And then they had the Mexican dance company did an Aztec ritual dance on the side of this mountain in this outdoor amphitheater carved out of the rocks. It's like red rocks, you know, and with the lights and the smoke and the whole bit. But what's fascinating was that everybody there was Mexican national dance, both men and women, and they're all brown hair and brown eyed. It was like, this looks really cool, you know. But it sort of brings it home to you that that's who Latinos are. For the most part, I mean, obviously the exceptions, but there's nothing wrong with that. And they didn't care. You know, this is who they were. It's like if you go to Sweden, you're going to see a lot of blonde people with blue eyes. That's who the Swedes are, except for the Muslims who've moved in. You know, so nations have characteristics. They develop different characteristics. Be proud of it. You know, if you're brown hair looks great. I love brown hair. You know, it looks great on people who should have brown hair or who start with brown hair. I digress. Let's get back to, excuse me.
I agree.
Yeah. Yeah, but you notice this label. Have you heard anybody or seen it on the news that they're describing Giorgia Meloni as a fascist? You know, she's just like Mussolini. She's going to bring about those fascist policies, which I think I've defended
the
successfully.
Same thing about Trump.
Yeah.
Yeah, this criminal.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting? The fascist. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I don't pay attention to the radical left. Yeah, they're just upset because she's doing good.
Yeah. It's interesting that the fascists always call other people fascists like it's an insult, even though that's who they are. You know how to tell a fascist? They're calling somebody else a fascist. That's generally what you should do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we go, nah, 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 nah. It takes one to know one. Anyway. Federalist. David Harsanyi, Harsanyi, September 26th, so that would have been yesterday, is Italy's next prime minister, Giorgia Meloni, a fascist? Hardly. He says, Giorgia Meloni, as you've doubtlessly heard, is the far right next prime minister of Italy. So says virtually every news outlet in the United States, which is their problem, not ours. They don't have much news, though. I wouldn't call them news outlets. I call them propaganda arms. But anyway, he says, and anyone familiar with the left's perfunctory use of, quote, ultra-conservative, far right, hard right, or semi-fascist, to describe those who take positions to the right of the Democrat Party's latest platform should be skeptical. Then again, trying to decipher European elections through the prism of American politics is a frustrating endeavor. But here is a catalog, best as I can pull together, of the claims used to portray Meloni as fascist. Meloni bemoans the chronically low birth rate in Italy and wants to implement pro-natalist policies. In other words, having more kids, right? That's what Hungary's doing. They're doing a good job at it, too. He says, now I think the prospect of technocratic policy curing low birth rates is dubious, but if incentivizing social behavior is now a fascistic endeavor, what does that say about the left's agenda? Meloni defends Europe's Christian identity. The American left acts like the mere mention of Christian is xenophobic and fascistic. Folks, remember how the fascists get rid of all religion? They get rid of God. The Nazis do too. Worship them, don't worship God. So to say that someone is fascist, you know, who believes in Christianity and believes in God, is again an oxymoron. It's a contradiction. It doesn't exist. It's irrational. And yet that's what they do because it works, because enough stupid people believing it that we haven't gotten to yet. Well, we're working on it. Back to the article. People get furious when this atheist points out that nearly every Christian majority nation in the world can boast of democratic institutions and high levels of freedom, with a few exceptions of a few places like Russia, while most non-Christian majority nations can't. There are thorny ideological and historical reasons for this reality, but reality it is. When Europe embraces a competing faith, be it secular universalism, multiculturalism, communism, fascism, I would include Nazism, things tend to go poorly. Melania opposes gay marriage, which isn't legally recognized in Italy. Well, good for them. Nor is gay adoption. Instead, there are same-sex civil unions. I'm fine with that too, which offer gay couples nearly the same legal protections as marriage. Laws that Meloni does not propose overturning. I agree with her. Recall that most Democrats, including Barack Obama, held the same position on the matter until 2012. Wrong or right, I don't recall reporters referring to it as fascistic or ideologically far right wing. Did the definition of fascist change in the past decade? Well, yeah, it has actually. You know, fascist means anybody who believes in God, country, and family. That's what they're calling fascist, which is the exact opposite of fascism, because a true fascist believes in a corporate government, absolute state. That's what fascism is. Okay, folks. Back to the article. Meloni opposes abortion and euthanasia. Every story mentions the protection of life as an evident sign of democratic backsliding. It took some digging to ferret out the official right-wing coalition's position. Outside nebulous language about life, Meloni promises to fund alternatives to abortion, using state power to shut down pregnancy centers and looking the other way when political terrorists firebomb them is quite fascisty. There's a new word. Offering pregnant women the means to keep their babies, not so much. Meloni opposes illegal immigration. Meloni is a moderate Eurosceptic. That's a new term for me. I've got to look more into this. Eurosceptic. And I think there are those who oppose the European Union as a government governing the governments. I think that's what Eurosceptic is, but I've got to look more into it. She's also pro-NATO and supports the West military backing of Ukraine and closer relations with Taiwan. Okay, well, I agree with Taiwan. I don't agree with NATO. I think we should get out of NATO. And I think backing Ukraine is crazy. If we hadn't backed Ukraine, they would have settled this by now, long ago, would have saved a whole lot of lives. Back to the article. Melania is critic of wokeness and the idea of malleable gender identity, the position of basically the entire world until a few minutes ago. Unlike the Tories of Britain or the likelihood in Israel, contends the Washington Post, Meloni is a norm wrecker. Anyone who spends 5 minutes studying post-war Italian governance will probably tell you the country could use some norm breaking. Meloni's party uses the tricolor flame logo that, quote, harks back to an earlier, more extreme political movement formed shortly after Mussolini's death. Yeah, that's what they're talking about. Talking about fascism again, right? Numerous outfits inform us that the populist right center coalition, including the party led by former Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi, had its roots in Italy's post-war fascist movements. In and of itself, this is meaningless. It's like saying Democrats have their roots in preserving slavery and segregation. See, I would disagree with the article. I think that Democrats do have their roots and their current belief in preserving slavery and segregation. They just use different names for it, you know, believing in their policies. Anyway, Meloni has denounced fascism, of course, because she's the opposite, contending Italy had handed fascism over to history for decades now. The National Alliance shed its fascistic views long ago. In the 2000s, its leader, Gianfranco Fini, visited Yad Vashem in Israel and called Mussolini's regime absolute evil. Maybe it was all just decades-long ruse to gain power, but as a context worth noting, many did not. Okay, it goes on to here. Oh, Meloni refused to vaccinate her daughter. There you go. Arguing that the probability of someone aged 0 to 19 dying of COVID-19 is the same as being struck and killed by lightning. To be fair, it's probably a lot lower. Yeah, lightning is a greater danger than COVID. That's interesting. I'm going to use that example. Meloni is, believe it or not, also a fan of Tolkien and even attended a Hobbit camp in 1993 when she was 16. Did you hear that? They said that she believes in Lord of the Rings. She must be a conspiracy theorist. Oh, please. Anyway, it says, the last bit, it says, who knows? Perhaps tomorrow Meloni will have the trains running on time and embrace a corporatist economic system like so many liberal Eurozone nations. By the way, that's the definition of fascism, by the way, a corporatist economic system. Okay, anyway. The article goes on, but that's basically the gist of it. So that's Georgia Maloney. Questions, comments, opinions. I think this is a good thing. I think she's like Margaret Thatcher was to England, that Trump was to the United States. I'm impressed. Panel, care to weigh in? Going once, going twice?
I'm impressed, too.
I'm silent. Go ahead, Bianchi.
I'm impressed. Me and Josie's impressed, but she won't say it.
Josie's busy. She's fixing her hair. So here's the question. Josie, comment if you can. If not, we'll catch you next time. How long before Trump meets with Maloney? What do you think? After he declares for president? That's what I think. As soon as Trump declares for president, he's going to meet with Maloney, he's going to meet with Nigel Farage, he's going to meet with Marine Le Pen, and they're going to talk about Europe, a future Europe, and United States cooperation. That's what I think.
Well, I think they're all working together. A lot of these countries, they're working with Trump right now. Many of these countries, yes.
Well, not the governments, because the governments hate Trump. You know, look at Boris Johnson of England. Was not particularly a Trump fan. In fact, he wasn't particularly a fan of freedom either. You look at the new prime minister of Israel. Netanyahu and Trump got along fabulously well. Didn't get along with Brandon at all, because Brandon's a joke. Well, here's the thing, too. Brandon, you know, even if you prosecute him and you throw him in jail, he doesn't know where he is now. How is he going to know where he is in jail? You know, he's not the problem. He's the figurehead. He's the figurehead that allows things to be said that the people that want them said, you know, Obama, Hillary, the folks behind him, Valerie Jarrett, Susan Rice, you know, the deep state cabal, John Bolton of the permanent war class, these people, the people that are behind the scenes, they're the ones that love what he's saying, but they know that he can't be held accountable for what he's saying, but he still gets it said. That's the double, the double-edged sword of Brandon. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, they're using him as a puppet. That's all. He's a puppet.
Yeah.
Here, let me give you some pills. Make sure you drink. So it's a mess.
Yeah, but they're also putting the blame on him too. So they're saying all these problems are because of Brandon. Well, Brandon doesn't even know what he's doing. So these problems are not because of him. He's just reading cards. The problems are the people that put these policies in. And if you think these policies, folks, are going to disappear, you know, when Brandon disappears, I have news for you. Do you think these policies are going to disappear if the Geldings take Congress? I have news for you. They're not. They're all going to be there because the Republicans, the first thing that's going to happen after the election, what's it, November 8th is the election. All right. So let's say the Republicans take Congress. They take the House, they take the Senate. November 9th, they're going to say, there's nothing we can do. Brandon is still president. He can veto anything we pass. That's what they're going to say the day after the election. Guarantee it. Maybe two days after the election.
I don't think so.
Almost immediately after the election. See, the Republicans, the GOP, the transgender Democrat rhinos, they want Brandon there because they want to have a reason not to do anything. Just like they loved Obama. They loved Obama. They passed an end to Obama, 62 times when Obama was president, knowing full well that he vetoed every time. As soon as Trump took office, they never passed a bill to get rid of Obamacare, not once. Why? Because they knew Trump would sign it. And they'd have to actually account for something that was against the deep state. And they don't want to do that. They love their position as the loyal, you know, controlled opposition that doesn't do anything. They love their position as being losers. They love not having to have any responsibility for anything and just get the perks. And happily go along. They love supporting the deep state because they are the deep state. They love the fact that Brandon's going to be a fake president, a coup president, when they take Congress, because that means for two more years, they don't have to do anything. They can say, well, Brandon's the president. He's going to veto everything we do. That's what's going to happen. Guarantee it. That's why we need Trump back.
Well, he was scared to go after Obama for being a fear of being called racist, as usual, and white supremacist. Mm-hmm. And crazy white men running around in the woods plotting on killing blacks.
Yep, got to get over that real fast. Hey, listen, I'm the one that called Martha's Vineyard Mighty Whitey Island. You know, I'm still here. I kind of like that name. In fact, we should do the Mighty Whitey Island Report. And now direct from Martha's Vineyard, the Mighty Whitey Island Report. I crack myself up. All right, Breitbart. Prime Minister-elect Truss, that's T-R-U-S-S, claims she will govern as a conservative. Claims. Keyword here is claims. Okay. So this was interesting. I thought she was a conservative until I read this article. And this is by Jack Montgomery, 5th of September. So what, 2 weeks ago? This is Foreign Secretary Liz Truss, now leader of Britain's governing conservative, that's the Tory party, and due to be formally invited to take the office of Prime Minister by Queen Elizabeth II on Tuesday, has claimed she will govern as a Conservative. Okay, this is written before the Queen passed away, and this is written before she actually became Prime Minister. So she was she is Prime Minister now. King Charles is the King of England, and there we go. But the article says, Truss emphasized that during his leadership campaign, during this leadership campaign, I campaigned as a Conservative, and I will govern as a Conservative. Which means she wasn't a Conservative before. If she campaigned as a Conservative, doesn't mean she is a Conservative. She says, I am a Conservative. She didn't say that. She says, I campaigned as a Conservative, and I will govern as a Conservative. Well, that's future. So obviously she was something else. So people have a really hard time lying directly. They can lie sort of. This is a sort of lie. Because you know she's not a Conservative by saying that she campaigned as a Conservative. Well, that should be obvious if you actually are. Conservatives don't say they're Conservatives. They don't say, you know, Trump doesn't say I'm campaigning as a Conservative. He says, I believe in America first. He doesn't have to say he's a Conservative. You know. But if you're on the fence, if you're in doubt, if you're not being truthful, if you're lying about who you are, then you say you're campaigning as a Conservative. That's kind of like the disclaimer, you know, that, you know, I can neither confirm nor deny what the military says about nuclear weapons. And then it says, I will govern as a Conservative. Well, does she even know what that is? Again, you know, governing as a Conservative, why don't you just govern, you know, with Conservative policies? It's a weird frame of speech that implies to me that she's lying. Anyway, this is her speech immediately after being announced as the winner of the party leadership contest by Sir Graham Brady MP. And that stands for Member of Parliament. All right, so let's go on back to the article again, which says the Foreign Secretary, that's Truss, was perhaps seeking to assuage the doubts of some in the party grassroots about her left-wing background. What do you mean a left-wing background? How can she say she's going to govern as a Conservative and campaign as a Conservative if she's got a left-wing background, unless she's radically changed? I don't know. The article says Truss was a fairly high-level activist in the Liberal Democrats in her youth. Okay. More recently, and perhaps more concerningly, Truss was a member of the left-liberal tendency within the Tory Parliamentary Party and campaigned fiercely against Brexit, which she has since claimed to have changed her mind on. Uh-oh. You want to see a big flag? If you campaigned fiercely against Brexit, it means you're a globalist and not a nationalist. You're one of them. You're not one of us. So Britain's lost. Britain went from Nigel Farage, who brought about Brexit, who got Britain out of the European Union, to Boris Johnson, who did nothing to promote Brexit and make sure the Brexit went through, to now Truss, who's going to do the same thing. She's going to do nothing to advance the Brexit policy. So it's almost like the vote was for nothing. That's how the globalists take away your victories. You give you a victory in name only, and then don't change the laws to fit the new policy. Anyway, she says, I will deliver a bold plan to cut taxes and grow our government. Well, shouldn't she already have a bold plan for that? She says, I will deliver on the energy crisis, dealing with people's energy bills. Well, that's not your responsibility. Your responsibility is to provide lots of energy, and the bills will take care of themselves. And then she says, but also dealing with the long-term issue we have on energy supply. Well, that's better. And I will deliver on national health service. Wait a minute. Conservatives don't want a national health service. Look what the national health service brought us. COVID vaccine mandates, lockdowns, masks, closed schools, closed companies, except for the big companies that donate to the party. That's your government health care. So anybody that says they're for national health service, they're not a Conservative, and they never will be. Back to the article. The promise to cut taxes quite imminently. This is what the article says here. If previous pronouncements can be relied upon, marks a significant departure from governance under the supposedly libertarian Boris Johnson, who along with Rishi Sunak, don't know who that is, when he was Chancellor of the Exchequer, that's the Treasury, spoke a great deal about their aspirations to cut taxes, but in practice, increase the tax burden to its heaviest in 70 years. So there's your new Conservative in England. So she's basically Brandon, who was elected. You know, so that's my take on that. Yeah. Comments? Let me get a little
bit more
of the article.
I think all these leaders are corrupt. All these leaders are corrupt all over the world.
Mm-hmm. So the question is, how do you fight it? And the only way I can think of to fight it is to have people write different laws. So if we give the laws to the government, say, these are the laws that we consent to be governed by. These are the laws we want you to pass. This is how we're going to operate from now on. No one's ever made that argument. Mm-hmm. People have always said, we need to get the right people in office. Well, the right people may get into office, but they don't stay the right people. They become co-opted.
No.
they get told by their party. Yeah, they get told by their party masters, you will vote this way or else you won't be here any longer.
Yeah, exactly. That's what's been happening. That's what's been happening in America. Look at George W. Bush, corrupt, and then his son, corrupt. And then each president that comes in, they become part of the corruption. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why they didn't want Donald Trump, because he didn't want to be part of them.
Mm-hmm. But even Donald Trump needs help. Donald Trump doesn't have the ideas that we have here. You know, Donald Trump has the administration. He has the charisma to get elected. He has the organization to build a huge business. He has the ability to do amazing things, but he doesn't have the vision that a lot of us do here. And so what I'm trying to do is to merge us with Trump in a way that we join forces with the Make America Great movement and become the inspiration, the ideas part of Make America Great Again. That's where I see us going. That's what I'm trying to accomplish. That's why I'm trying to get in touch with the Trump administration folks, get them on the show, and talk about the ideas we have here, get those ideas to Trump so that we become an integral part of the 2024 campaign. That's what I'm working on.
If they allow me to writeyourlaws.com and the story coming up soon, I'm sure some of them are going to be reading some of your bills.
I hope so.
That was the idea that I put, because I have given my bill to Mike Flynn, Cindy Powell in her hands, Sean Hannity, so many different people. I mean, in their hand, and nothing does anything about it.
Because that was a one-time event. Yeah, because it was a one-time event. So what we need is we need Emerald Robinson, who had me on her show a few weeks ago, to report on bills on a regular basis. We need her to share those with Mike Lindell of Lindell TV. That's his network. He needs to share those bills with Donald Trump. You know, the other people on that show, Brandon House, Steve Bannon, some of the other folks that are on Lindell TV, they all need to be talking about bills every day. I mean, if they take like 2 minutes per day, you know, here's our bill of the day or the bill of the week. We're going to feature, you know, if 1 week they featured vaccine product liability, all the shows. If the next week they featured, you know, getting rid of big tech censorship, all their shows. Just spend a few minutes on each bill. Contact your legislator. Here's the link. Here's where you find it. You know, go that way. You know, if they did that and then other networks started doing it, if the Federalist, you know, covered us, if Breitbart covered us, if Children's Health Defense, especially Robert Kennedy Jr.'s organization, if they post our vaccine bill, we're trying to get Robert Kennedy on the show. You know, we're working on that. Judy's friends with him. You know, Judy Mikovits.
Okay, good.
Oh, yeah. So I'm not saying anything secret here because she's talked about it openly on the show.
Yeah.
She calls him Bobby. I said, you call him Bobby?
Yeah, Bobby. That's what they call him.
She says, all his friends call him Bobby. I said, oh, great. Can I call him Bobby?
Yeah.
We'll see. I'll call him Robert.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll call him Robert. But that's the thing, that we're this is how close we are. I don't think people realize how close we are to merging with the MAGA folks in a way. But go ahead, Bianchi.
You ever watch Price is Right?
Yeah. Uh huh.
And when you have a contestant up on the stage trying to figure the price, then he turns to the crowd for assistance. Well, that's the way your politics could be. The people or the crowd telling the politician which direction to go, and they should listen and follow. If not,
I agree.
They go back to their seat.
Yeah. But it takes multiple exposures. You know, people hear this one time, it doesn't make a difference. But when they hear it, you know, several times a week, citizen legislation.
Yes.
We can stop inflation the minute that constitutional amendment passes to take away the power of Congress to borrow money. There will be no more inflation because inflation is caused by government spending, borrowing, and printing money. If you take away the power to borrow, they have to live within their means. The currency is fixed. The Fed loses its justification because they're not going to regulate the money supply anymore because the money supply is regulating itself. It's stabilized by getting rid of the ability of Congress to borrow money. You know, so all these things can happen.
Yep.
And if you explain it to people on that very simple, straightforward level, we can end inflation. We can increase the value of the dollar. We can increase the value of your savings. We can cause deflation. Your prices will drop. And we will have unparalleled economic growth and prosperity. All you have to do is send this amendment to Congress and get the process started.
Definitely.
At the same time, you have to have a simulcast going on where you are incorporating the right type mm-hmm. of education for your children, because if you don't, then you're going to have to deal with dumb people for a continuum rather than mm-hmm. changing the mindset, then having those that come in behind them knowing the thing that's right to do.
See, that's why I need to abolish mm-hmm. government schools, because all they are is indoctrination centers of
yep.
the left. So we do okay. that, you know, and this is why I kept screaming, you know, when the schools were closed in 2020, I said, good, keep them closed. Sell the buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Fire all the teachers. Open them up as private schools. You know, sell them
yes.
to entrepreneurs at a bargain price. I said, now is the time. All the schools in the country are closed. We can get rid of the public education system right now. And nobody picked up on it. Everybody said it was crazy. Well, you guys didn't.
Well,
but so many people, they said, you can't do that. We need the public schools. Oh, well.
Great. You know. 1.2 million children did not return to public school. Did not.
That's a good thing. Yeah, but why should any of them?
Yeah, that's
why should
not,
any? Why should any
there,
poor
I
kid?
I wish there were more.
Yeah, but why should any kid have to suffer with a government education? If you literally close the schools. See, here's the thing, though. If you close all the government schools, mm-hmm. all those government taxes for education would still be collected.
Yep.
So where
yep.
would they go? Well, there's your voucher program. I mean, I had this all figured out. Mm-hmm. The plan was there, and nobody stepped up. You know, I sent out press releases. I did shows on this. I said, close the government schools. Change the buildings. Demolish the buildings. Build new schools that actually look nice, that don't look like prisons.
We're with you. Yeah.
Yeah. And, that was the window.
That.
We had like this mm-hmm. six-month window from March, April, May, June, July, August. Yeah.
It's not too late.
No, it's never too late, but it would have been easier because they were already closed. Everybody was gone.
Yeah.
The teachers were in Argentina on the beaches. You know, sending back videos of how they were spending their salaries.
A lot of the teachers were part of the Antifa in the streets. A lot of the college, a lot of the school. Yeah,
well, that's true
a lot
too.
Of the radical left teachers were on the street marching with mm-hmm. the Antifa group. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of them were teachers. Yeah.
Yep.
Hey, guys, God bless you. I got to get going. I have to go to the hospital before I open my store today. I got a new girl I'm training. So God bless you. Nice talking to both of you chicos.
Well, thank you. Nice talking to you too. Feel free to play our show in your store, you know, anytime the store is open.
I do.
We have podcasts. Oh, good. That must be interesting.
God bless. Bye.
God bless you too. All right. So back to Brexit here for a little bit, or back to this article on the new Prime Minister of England, talking about the self-conscious pledge to govern as a conservative after Johnson, that's Boris Johnson, the previous Prime Minister, spent much of his premiership neglecting Brexit, which is the British exit from the European Union, hiking taxes, pushing net zero green agenda, that's getting rid of our carbon so we all die, increasing immigration, probably illegal, and drawing up anti-free speech laws on online harms, drew pointed remarks from some conservatives outside the official Conservative Party, none more prominent than Brexit champion Nigel Farage. So this is something that I just learned recently, too. This is why I'm starting the international group, you know, after the show, is that Boris Johnson, you know, alleged conservative, was a terrible prime minister. He was basically a liberal. He promised to govern as a conservative and then went liberal. I think Truss is going to do exactly the same thing. She's promised to govern as a conservative, but that doesn't mean anything unless you actually do govern as a conservative. So that's the situation we find ourselves in. So we shall take a look and we shall see. Nigel Farage, I found out from Jen Clark, is in Australia. And so he's doing tours now. It says Nigel Farage is a co-leader and former leader of the UK Independence Party, the UKIP, I guess that's UKIP, there we go, and the Brexit Party, now the Reform UK. Wow, sounds like Ross Perot. He was the face of the successful campaign to take the UK out of the European Union in the 2016 Brexit referendum. What are we now, 2022? That was 6 years ago. Huh, no wonder people are upset. Positioning the referendum as the start of a global populist wave against the political establishment. Yeah, so we got to talk to Nigel. We got to get him on the show. He will love what we do here. Because if I can show Nigel Farage how Action Radio works, how the citizen legislature works, how anybody can write a bill, how we can get that bill into media, how we can get that to politicians, and we can get enough groundswell to turn everybody into a lobbyist to get these bills passed, that's a revolution, folks. That's really what this is all about. And I think that's why our audience is growing so fast in England, Australia, and Canada. Let me just check my live chat, see if anybody's talking to us. Nope, not yet. Live chat's open. The Skype line's open. you know, Skype line, you got to call in and then I have to approve your account. So you probably won't get on the first day you call in, but to the day after that shouldn't be a problem. It says Farage, this is back to his website. Oh, no, this is the Australian tour website. Farage, Nigel Farage, has been described as the most important British politician of the last decade and one of the most influential. Farage has become the great disruptor of British and European politics and is widely consulted for his views on changing the nature of Western politics. Okay, well, you want to see the changing nature of Western politics? Listen to this show. We are the changing nature of Western politics, folks. And then we're going to get to Eastern politics. Pianki, Iran dropped. So Iran's been with us since the beginning, but I guess the mullahs finally had enough of our freedom talk. So Iran has dropped off the world map. Now, what are you going to do? We had a good run. Hopefully they'll be back. We shall see. 35 here. We've got about 5 minutes to go, and then I'm going to play, as I probably earlier, the piece on Nation State. Maybe I'll do that earlier. I don't know. I haven't decided yet. I want to get through this this article here. Dateline Canada. I want to get my news. Where's my news teletype here? Let's make it sound like a news show. Here we go. Dateline Canada. This is from CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, Calgary. MADU, that's M-A-D-U, thanks Freedom Convoys, those are the folks I talk to up in Canada and Australia, for mobilizing against Ottawa's tyrannical pandemic policies. Isn't this great? Alberta Cabinet Minister says restrictions were about political control and power. Interesting. Casey MADU, Alberta's Labor and Immigration Minister, took aim at federal travel restrictions on Tuesday while thanking all those citizens, Freedom Convoys, who had the courage to mobilize against these tyrannical policies. I'm MADU. Pianki, where's that from? He's black. I'm just curious if is that a name from any country you might recognize?
MADU?
Yeah, M-A-D-U. Casey MADU, K-A-Y-C-E-E-M-A-D-U. He's Alberta, Canada's minister, labor and immigration minister. Now, there's not a lot of black folks in Canada.
Zambia.
Zambia, okay. Well, the reason I'm curious is because
Zambia, Central Africa. Is he black?
He's black, yeah.
Yeah, he's probably from Zambia.
Okay, because there are not a lot of black Canadians, you know, except for the last maybe 30, 40 years. So I'm guessing either he or his parents maybe were immigrants to Canada. You know, I grew up in Toronto.
Yeah.
Toronto was all white. Trust me, Toronto was white. You know, that's just the way it was. Canada is an incredibly white country, which is not, you know, it's no big deal. It's just the way it is, right? Canada had a lot of Jamaican immigrants. I don't know if Canada had an African immigrant encouragement incentive program. I'm not sure. But that's what I'm asking. The reason I find this interesting is that it's freezing cold, though. It's got to be climate change. Climate shock.
There's a lot of them up there.
Yeah, it's got to be climate shock from Zambia to Alberta. Alberta's one of the coldest places on the planet. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's probably inside a lot. Well, why I find this interesting is that immigrants are generally the people that fight strongest for independence. You look at the immigrants on this show, Josie, me, you know, I thought, who else? And folks that are fairly, Dr. Peter Pry, I think his family came from Russia. Maybe his parents did. We have a lot of very close immigrant, you know, either immigrants themselves, like me and Josie, and first generation people that were born here to immigrant parents. And so you find that immigrants are some of the strongest supporters of freedom. You know, I think Canada is the same way. People that go to Canada from whatever country they came from. Well, tell me about Zambia. I don't know anything about that country. I think we actually have listeners in Zambia. I mean, yeah, we do. In fact, yeah, we have Zimbabwe, Zambia.
Uh-huh. In the area of Zimbabwe, they're in sort of central. It's landlocked.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they're on a map. They're on the countries in Africa.
Christian nation. Yeah, Christian nation, basically the following of the religion. And there's a lot of language groups.
Were they a colony of any of the European powers, or were they independent?
Well, it was probably occupied by Britain at one time.
Okay. Huh.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Okay. Now
they had a
curious
white vice president.
What's that now?
Scott. Scott. Something.
Really?
Yeah, they had a white vice president who was a Zambian. But that's not typical, but they did have one.
That's okay. What was
it? Scott something.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the prime minister, I think it was either Argentina or one of the countries in South America, I think it was Argentina, President Fujimori, you know, of Japanese ancestry. So Argentina.
No, I don't remember.
Yeah, let me look up real quick. Fujimori, I think was the prime minister's name. So I have a good memory, but not a great memory. Fuji, hang on, Fujimori. I'm not typing well. Fujimori. Peru. It was Peru. He was president. Yeah, Alberto, which is a Latino name, Fujimori, which is a Japanese name. Yeah. Alberto Kinya Fujimori. Inomoto. It's a great name. It's an interesting mixture of Spanish and Japanese. And Peruvian statesman, professor, and former engineer who was president of Peru 1990 to 2000. Yeah, I thought I recognized that name. So it was. I love how these international border things you wouldn't expect. You wouldn't expect a Japanese ancestry, you know, president of Peru. That's fascinating to me. So if we have a Zambian, either immigrant or descendant, as someone who's advocating freedom. So the point I was getting to is that he's advocating freedom much more than the Trudeau long-term family, you know, Quebecois, Quebec family of the Trudeau family. Pierre Trudeau being his father, who was prime minister, you know, basically they're advocating tyranny. So I just found that interesting. Anyway, let me get to the article. This is Casey Madu, Alberta's. Oh, I read that. Alberta's Minister of Labor and Immigration has taken to. Why does Alberta have a Ministry of Immigration? That's interesting in itself. Anyway, Labor and Immigration has taken to social media to criticize Ottawa's tyrannical pandemic travel restrictions and thank freedom convoys for their efforts against them. Let me check the date on this. I think this is a recent article, though. Yeah, September 21st. So he's still criticized. So those policies must still be enforced. He says in a tweet responding to news about the federal government potentially ending COVID-19 border requirements, Casey Madu said the measure was, quote, never was about science, political control, and power. I like this guy. We should get him on the show. He says, thanks to all citizens, freedom convoys who had the courage to mobilize against these tyrannical policies. Read the remark on Madu's Twitter account on Tuesday. There was a reporter that from Ottawa we had on the show, Jenny Jane. I think that was her name. I could be wrong. Anyway, she was on. She was so upset at the end of the – do you remember when she was on? The hour – she's from Ottawa talking about the convoys and the way these people were horribly treated by the Trudeau government. I'll have to go check her name. I'll go see. I could be wrong. Anyway, but yeah. And so she was on. It was a fabulous report. You know, there's a lot of Canadians that really object to what's going on there. I mean, you really do. And it's quite fascinating to see what's happening. Anyway, she says, thanks to all those citizens, freedom convoys who had the courage to mobilize. They endured a lot of hate, name-calling, suffered and vilified on behalf of all of us. I thank them. Continue the tweet from a former Solicitor General, Minister of Justice. This is pretty encouraging. I'm liking this. I think we got some good stuff going on. This is the comment came after it was reported Tuesday the federal government is leaning towards dropping the vaccine requirement for people entering Canada, ending random COVID-19 testing at airports, and making use of the Arrive Can app. I guess that's Arrive Canada app, by the end of this month. Such travel restrictions were among the pandemic measures that ignited large protests earlier this year, including those that jammed streets in Ottawa for several weeks and blocked international borders like COUTTS Alta. I'm not sure where that is. Anyway. Casey Madu tweets, it was never about science, but about political control and power, thanks to all those citizens, freedom convoys who had the courage to mobilize against these tyrannical policies. That's what I just read. So I got some hope for Canada. Pianki, what do you think? This could be a good thing.
Yes, good thing in a different wrapper.
Yeah. It's interesting the immigrants
you
that
only
make the difference.
Another. Huh?
It's interesting the immigrants that make the difference. In a lot of these countries now.
Well, they've experienced something different.
Yeah.
Some people have it going on right under their nose and don't recognize it.
Absolutely. All right, so I got one more here, and then I might play our piece on separation of church and state. I'm pretty much done. I mean, I've covered everything I wanted to cover. So here's Nigel Farage from his own website, Tuesday, September 27th. Oh, this is an article that he wrote June 25th of 2022. So here's the thing, though. What do you think is going to happen with Britain? You know, when Trump comes back, you know, either next year or 2024, he's going to have to deal with an England that is You know, if it was a Boris Johnson in England or I forgot what Ms. Truss's first name is, but you've got liberals masquerading as conservatives, they're not going to be a lot of help. It's not going to be like Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan. It's going to be something totally different. Anyway, got any ideas? Okay. Well, I guess we'll wait and see.
I can't tell you much about Boris Johnson's part of the world. I never, especially of late, haven't put too much attention to him because there's just so much here to keep abreast to.
Well, yeah, there's a lot going on here. Well, you know, we've got plenty going on. Like I say, we're under a coup. We're under an illegal government. There's a lot of stuff here that, you know, we don't know where it's going to go. We've never been in this place before. This is why it's so fascinating that Action Radio, that I was able to do this at this particular time in history with the technology we have, with the COVID, you know, oppressive policies, with an illegal government. I mean, what are the chances all these things would happen at the same time? This is a really interesting time in history.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of things happening at the same time. And it takes a lot of energy and steadfastness for people to get to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the reasons why the opposition has gotten so far. First, it was very sneaky and quiet. Now, all of a sudden, it's an onslaught coming from many directions. At the one time, whether it's school board meeting, whether it's border protection, whether it's removal of your liberties and rights when it comes down to vaccinations and confinement and shutdowns, just so much going on at one time.
Yeah, sure is. Let me switch countries. I want to go to France. I want to make sure. I haven't covered France yet. And so this is from Investment Watch. This is about, the article says, some highlights from Marine Le Pen's platform. So Marine Le Pen, that's not her full name. She's a contraction of a couple of different names, of her first names. Anyway, her father, Le Pen, you know, senior, was an activist back from the early 70s. And they're patriots, they're freedom folks, they're people in France, they're conservatives, you know, they're nationalists, they're all the things, you know, believe in God, you know, country and family, all the things we believe here. And she was absolutely demonized. She was treated like Trump, you know, in France. And I believe, as Josie, we talked about this earlier, that she had her election stolen. And so there's a very good chance that I think that happened. And that's why, what's his name, Macron, is in, you know, got his presidency back, and he's doing what socialists normally do, you know, nothing, you know, widespread illegal immigration and destroying the economy with socialism. But here's what she stood for, and hopefully she'll be back as well. But if you see, you know, if we get to be a great combination of Giorgia Meloni in Italy, Marine Le Pen in France, and a British prime minister like Nigel Farage, you know, where they actually had those three countries, Britain, France, and Italy, coordinate. Of course, then we need Germany too. And, I don't see Germany as having a huge tradition of freedom and liberty. No offense, I'm not just talking World War II, but I'm talking about, you know, Bismarck, you know, the feudal states. I mean, Germany has not been a country. I don't even know if Germany has a Bill of Rights. But it'd be nice to have a German come forward, a freedom-seeking German person, equivalent to Giorgia Meloni of Italy, Marine Le Pen in France, and Nigel Farage in England, and Donald Trump here. It'd be nice to see. And this minister up in Canada we're just talking about, Casey Madu. And hopefully he'll be prime minister sometime. Although some other good folks in Canada too that I've reported on earlier. Anyway, so lots happening in these countries. It's quite fascinating. So let me read this article here. April 12th, 2022, so it's a few months old. I think this is right before she either lost or right after she lost. I'm not sure where. Article by Chris Black, B-L-A-C-K. And this is in the Investment Watch website. He says, I do not believe a populist leader inheriting a demo-plutocratic state as entrenched as France can execute Le Pen's platform if elected. She says, in the French context, it will require Le Pen to have both military backing and a large street movement supporting a massive purge of the existing judicial, capitalist, and media classes. She says, I hope I'm wrong, but I don't see her party as having the will to do that. This is interesting. I don't agree with that at all. You know, a lot of times these articles, I haven't memorized them all, so I don't know. I just said, well, this looks interesting. Let's talk about this. Then it says, but an election win would still be a massive moral victory. Marine Le Pen, unlike Trump, is a serious political actor. Okay, I disagree with that too. Trump is a very serious political actor. says being unable to implement any of her platform due to veto by unelected forces could discredit the post-war liberal system for good. Okay, here's what I think they're saying, but I disagree with the basic premise. But it's the same thing Trump ran into. Trump tried to institute all kinds of things, but he didn't replace the people in government. Because he didn't replace the people in government, none of his policies got implemented. The deep state took over. I think this guy's saying that if Marine Le Pen, you know, became prime minister of France, that those same unelected bureaucrats would stop her just like they stopped Trump. But here's her policy. The reason I picked up this article was it has her platform. Tell me if this sounds familiar. Immigration. This is from Marine Le Pen, presidential candidate. She says only French citizens will have access to welfare benefits. Makes sense. French nationals will be given preference in access to social housing and to jobs. Well, I'm not sure what social housing and jobs is. That sounds socialist to me. But French nationals, if they have it, should get it first. Stop family reunification. I'm not sure what that means either. I think that means, you know, unaccompanied minors who run into the country, you know, get matched up with all kinds of folks. I'm not sure what that is. This one I do get. Systematically deport undocumented migrants, in other words, illegal aliens, foreigners convicted of crimes. I can support that. Withdraw residency for migrants that are out of work for more than a year. Well, there you go. Remove birthright citizenship. Absolutely agree with that. Asylum requests to be processed outside of France. I agree with that too. That's much more of a Trump thing. Withdraw France from NATO's military command structures. That would be interesting. If France gets out of NATO, okay, that's huge. I think they should. I think Britain should too, and I think we should. In fact, I don't think NATO should exist anymore. It's outlived its usefulness. This is for the French Constitution to prevail over international law. See, now this is really interesting, Piaki, because if the French Constitution is subordinate to international law, there is no French Constitution. You know, this is why our Constitution says very clearly, we are the, you know, the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. Now, the government can make treaties with other countries, but they're still not superior to the Constitution. And if those treaties conflict with the Constitution still governs us. This is why all these people who say we're a nation of, you know, we're under the UN, that the UN owns us, that we're all slaves to the UN. It's not true. Now, in practice, are the government people following the Constitution? No. But the Constitution still exists, therefore we can still use it, and we are still, you know, we the people of the United States, not we the people of the world. So this is a good thing. But France, I didn't know they were under international law. That's stupid. And the last one here, create a European alliance of nations.
How their work needed. I mean, you don't really, that's just like the Human Rights Declaration.
Oh, that's a horrible document.
We have a Constitution. We don't need a Human Rights Declaration. We have civil rights.
Well, and that's a really important distinction. People don't, and this is what we spent a lot of time with Jen Clark in Australia on. You know, when we talked about the individual rights versus human rights. Well, you know, people, when they talk about the UN, human rights. Well, if you can't have human rights in your Bill of Rights, because that means every human on the planet has the right to everything you have in that country, be it Australia or the United States. So what the UN really is doing is you know, basically international slavery to the UN. The UN Human Rights document is a government subordination to the UN because they're the ones who will tell everybody what human rights are. You know, you have a right to a home and a car and a certain amount of income, and you have a right to medical care and a free education, all this other stuff. That's all in there. Well, that makes people slave to the UN. So saying that human rights is meaningless. It's individual rights and civil rights. Those are what rights are. You know, human is a collective, and a collective cannot have rights. Only individuals can have rights. So do human beings have individual rights? Absolutely. But along with human rights, the UN defines responsibilities. See, this is the catch. Hey, have you read that document recently, Piaki? UN document on human rights?
I've heard people talk it, and I read it once, or maybe twice, or maybe more.
Yeah.
But the, you know, this whole thing about children deciding, that's where it comes from.
Yeah.
It comes from the Human Rights Declaration.
Well, because children are people, too. They have a right to decide. Yeah, what they're told by the UN. No.
Children deciding their gender going against their parents. That's that comes from the Human Rights Declaration from as I understood it when I read it.
I think it does, too. I think you're right. It's been a while. I looked at it very carefully because in Australia, when we were crafting the Australian Bill of Individual Rights, it was very clear that Australians, you know, when they tried to do this before in Canada and other countries, have adopted the UN Declaration of Human Rights as a Bill of Rights, and it's not. It's a bill of responsibilities to the UN and to every other person on the planet. In other words, they have a right to your income, your country, your land, everything you've worked for. You know, and that's the problem with the UN Declaration.
That's getting to the likes of a dictator, because it depends on who's the head of the UN.
Yeah.
And we've seen either the president or last head of the UN, how they were definitely against Trump.
Oh, they sure were. You know, look at the WHO, you know, the World Health Organization that sort of managed COVID on a global scale for the UN. But the biggest problem is they talk about responsibilities. And it's like the Declaration of Human Rights, you know, says you have responsibilities. In other words, you have free speech, but you can't offend somebody. Your responsibility is to exercise free speech that is inoffensive. Well, that takes away free speech. Free speech is supposed to be offensive. It's not offensive. There's no point. If you don't offend somebody, that means you're agreeing with everybody. And if you're saying things that everybody agrees with, that's not free speech. That's just repeating stuff that's already been said. Anyway, that's Marine Le Pen. She also wants to create a European alliance of nations intended to progressively replace the European Union. I don't think, you know, if they want to have a trade thing, you know, the best thing they could do is what we do. Have the what's the free trade agreement between Canada, Mexico, and us? That's all you need. Huh.
Well, rather than free trade, you need to have fair trade. Because if you have free trade, that means that they get to the point where a nation can dump into your country based on a whole lot of reasons, price, currency manipulation, so on and so on. So you want to have fair trade.
Exactly. Let me get you another article here that sort of couples a couple of other things we talked about. This is Olivia Pearson.org, Free Thought Advocate. She's someone I might want to have on the show. This is an article I haven't read a lot of. In fact, I was up late, you know, pulling articles together, not knowing how many I was going to get through on the show today. But Olivia Pearson, so that's OliviaPearson, OliviaPearson.org. She says, Marine Le Pen, a nationalist? You say it like it's a bad thing. So the reason I picked this article is it really talks about nationalism and why it's such a good thing. And she says, nationalism has become the filthiest word in the modern Western lexicon, on a par with the word colonialism. Yet the value of nationalism is arguably good for any country which still has the ability to cultivate feelings of unity and pride in people who share a unique identity and cultural heritage. It is exactly this reason why globalists hate the idea so much. They see it as an obstacle to their bleak agenda of worldwide cultural homogeneity. I'm not good with words this morning. H-O-M-O-G-E-N-E-I-T-Y, homogeneity. In other words, we're all the same. It is a disagreement very similar in sentiment to the clash between individualism versus collectivism. In fact, it is almost identical to this, only more macrocosmic. Said globalists must just loathe the Olympic Games. All those powerful athletes patriotically representing their countries and competing for individual physical superiority? Horrors. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. The last Olympics held in communist China. That is kind of a contradiction. Back to the article. Marine Le Pen, who has to be one of the world's most courageous women living today, incurs far too much criticism for standing on a nationalist platform, as if it's a bad thing. The national character of France is what the French people once felt so proud to uphold since the time of its great influence over European enlightenment. This French character promoted valuable attributes, namely the emancipation of women and children, religious tolerance, a dedication to scientific inquiry, the economic system of capitalism and innovation, and the greatest gem which makes all these others possible, freedom of speech and of the press. I didn't know that came from France. You know, I thought it was British, but that's interesting. So I got to look into the Enlightenment now. So I think it was maybe a British-French cooperative effort, but now I'm curious. Back to the article. Watching France go through its general election has become almost as painful as the 2016 election, resulting in the election of Donald J. Trump as president. I say painful because of the media bias skewed so heavily against Madame Le Pen as it was and still is against Trump. Remember, this is written in 2017, so it only got worse, right? Le Pen has been extremely vocal on conquering Islamic terrorism in her own country. Terror, which happens now somewhere in the Western world almost on a weekly basis, as some of us predicted it would, and that was before the great immigration crisis. the current socialist president, Hollande, so this is back in 2017 in France, has said that the French have to accept that this is now le new normal, in other words, the new normal, right? Le Pen is saying bollocks, I guess that's a British term, B-O-L-L-I-X, to that, in French, of course. That's like BS, only say the word. Right? It is something that they must fight and eradicate. Now that's the spirit. Where have all the old Frenchmen gone? Well, folks forget that, you know, the French government, you know, collaborated with the Nazis and with the Vichy in France in World War II. The French people formed the French Resistance, took their private guns and shot the Nazis in occupied France. So you're talking about, this is the difference between the independent French, the nationalist French, the French that fought for their country, and the government of France that sold them out and invited the Nazis in just so long as they didn't mess up the art galleries and cafes in Paris. Pretty big difference. I'm with the nationalists. I would have been with the French Resistance, guarantee it. Article says Le Pen's opponent, 39-year-old Emmanuel Macron, he's kind of young, isn't he, is declaring that the French people must vote for him in order to stop the, quote, greatest enemy to France, nationalism. Excusez-moi? Is he joking? I'm afraid not. He hates Marine Le Pen and nationalism more than he hates Islamic terror in France, ushered in by the multi-culti zealots of the European Union with their suicidal open immigration policies, policies which Macron has committed to continue. The greatest enemy within France is Islamic terror attacks similar to the Nice truck attacks, the Charlie Hebdo massacre, the Bataclan theater massacre, and all the rest. Over 32 attacks in the 21st century alone. And there were more of these. Remember the, Pierre, remember in France when they had the Paris, that the AK-47s shot up this entire cafe and like 250 people died? It was a massive attack. Way larger than once we
did. Yeah, it was.
Yeah. And that was done because the French don't carry, they can't carry guns. Now, it's interesting. People forget, you know, you want to talk about a great use of guns to save your country. It was the French resistance in World War II. That was all done with privately owned firearms. They weren't government arms. They weren't issuing guns to the militia, the resistance. They had their own guns. And a lot of guns they stole from the Germans. You know, so that's a way a resistance works.
They had a famous black female entertainer that fought with the French resistance. A female.
Who was that?
I can't think of her name.
Yeah,
I can't think of her name. I don't know who. Baker, but I'm not sure. Hurston, I'm not sure who she was.
We can look it up. It'd be good to know. Now, it's interesting that didn't a lot of black soldiers, both World War One and World War Two, stay in France after the war?
Well, because of France didn't have look at their color skin.
Yeah.
A lot of, well, not a lot, but some of the Tuskegee Airmen fell in love with French women.
Plus, the French women are hot. I love France. It's the accent, too. French language. It'll do it to you. Yeah. Have you been there? Have you had a chance to
No, I've never been. Never been to France.
Oh, I think I love it. Yeah. We need to get, we need to do some action radio travels. Like I say, we're looking at Belize with our tour guide friend, Alan Dawson. Shelby, we got to get on a cruise, but I think we need to see some of Europe. I got to go to Europe, got to go to Asia, got to go to Africa, and got to go to South America. There's some places we just have to go, and we have to bring action radio mm-hmm. with us. But we have a blast. You and I have a blast in Paris. You can even be great fun. That would be cool. Be on
French
radio.
You just fly up around Nova Scotia and take the short jump over to Europe.
Well, I could fly my jet when I get it. It's got a 1,000-mile range. And so that's enough to get from here, you know, probably Maine, you know, then Gander, Newfoundland, then the Azores, you know, then over to Europe, then over to Shannon Island, just like they used to do the old prop jobs.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they used to do it. Yeah. The old DC-4s and 6s and 7s. I don't think there ever was a DC-5. I think they skipped that for some reason. Maybe it was a bad airplane. But yeah, I remember as a kid, you know, watching the DC-4s, 6s, and 7s fly overhead, you know, in Toronto before the jets came in. You know, back in the, well, I guess they had the 707s. Yeah, yeah. Actually, my first flight on an airliner was on a Vickers Viscount. You know, that was my first airline flight.
You know, you look at the French history, they used to get beat up by the Vikings quite a bit, too.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, but they had a real tough Gauls. Remember the Gauls of France that took on the Roman Empire?
Gauls, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See, people, here's another thing, too. Although the French government gave up on the French in World War II, the French in World War I, except for the government and their horrendous military leaders, were incredibly brave. You know, there's a lot of French aces. René Lefranc from World War I.
Mm-hmm.
The French have long been incredible fighters. You know, where do you think the Three Musketeers came from? You know, France has a long tradition. It's true. They're French. Okay? You know,
Three Musketeers was produced by, what's that writer, the Russian writer? As a matter of fact, he was black.
No, it was a French writer. Alexander. No, it's Dumas.
Alexander Dumas.
He wasn't Russian. He was French. Wasn't he? I'm not the
well,
one.
Well, no. Yeah, you're right. You're right. I was thinking about the Russian something. That Alexander Dumas created the Three Musketeers. He would, in America, he would be considered black because of, you know, it ranges from the brightest of the bright to the darkest of the dark. So politically, the way it changed. But he was a human being, and he was a good writer.
Well, yeah, and the whole idea of dueling. See, I like the idea of dueling. You know, not to the death, but first cut. You know, if you're a real man and you believe in your convictions, I see women dueling too. That'd be interesting. Remember we did a show on dueling, on the virtues of dueling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the fact that we don't need lawyers as much. But if you really believe in your convictions, would you face a man with a sword? I would. You know, would I want to die in the process? No. Would I practice? Absolutely. But I think rapiers would first cut, and usually it's on your arm because that's the part that's furthest out. But if you were dueling in rapiers, if you had the courage of your convictions where your life was on the line, where you absolutely believed in what you were saying, that's a much better test of your convictions than, you know, some lawyer arguing in a court for you, you know, where the most money wins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, dueling didn't always work. You know, Aaron Burr, who was a scumbag, killed Alexander Hamilton in a duel, but that was pistols. Pistols is not dueling. That's cheating. Real dueling is with swords. I was born the wrong time, Bianchi. I'm like, you know, 100, I'm 200 years out of date, where I should be. But of course, I like having the technology. I really like having Novocaine. You know, so the technology and Novocaine, you know, for dental stuff. Those are two essentials. That's what I would miss those if I had to go back to the 1700s. Okay, I think I pretty much covered Macron and Le Pen, and we know where these folks all stand. But the basic thrust of all the stuff we're talking about today, there are people that believe in their country. You know, nationalism is a good thing.
And they've been given derogatory, but technically true, when they say white nationalists, there's black nationalists who believe strongly in the country, and mm-hmm. they've just been labeled black. There's yellow red master, so it's an affirmation for your country.
Yeah. Yeah, but as you said, you had the white guy from Zambia, you know, and so it doesn't – we need to get the skin color out of this whole thing. A nationalist is a nationalist, you know, especially a country – especially the United States, you know. Right. So nationalism is a good thing. Supremacy is not.
You got people with disgusted minds. Right. Yeah. Nigeria announced that they would no longer allow European actresses like showing on billboards and so forth. And immediately the woke crowd say, well, no more white women will be actresses and models in Nigeria. Said, well, hell, there's the white Nigerians.
Yeah, oh. Do you know how much of the population? You know, I'm just curious. Ballpark figure.
It's not much of the population, but they do exist. So the message was not about skin color. It was about nationality.
Well, if they're both Nigerians, though, that I'm a little confused here. So in other words, the identity of a Nigerian,
you had the woke crowd in America saying that, well, they're not going to allow – it's good that whites can't go into Nigeria and take over. But it's not. They weren't. They said that it was going to be Nigerians first.
Yeah.
And they're all white Nigerians.
So as far as Nigeria was concerned, there was no problem having models that were white or black as long as they were Nigerian.
No. As long as they're Nigerian. They're nationalistic.
Yeah. But the racist woke crowd here assumed that all Nigerians are black, You know, they couldn't conceive of white Nigerians. And so they see this. See, mm-hmm. see racism. If you want to say racism is so fascinating because the real racists don't even know they're racist. They have no clue. They're the ones that are accusing everybody else of racism. Just like the real fascists, they don't realize they're fascists. You know, because they wouldn't want to think
they're
right. fascists. They want to think that other people are fascists. So they call other people fascists when they're in fact fascists. So then you combine the mm-hmm. two. You know, you combine racists and fascists, and you get Democrats. When you think about it.
Well, if you think from a logical point of view or reality, you pull the table out from under them, they can't stand. This is like getting rid of government schools and putting more choice. You would start to pull one of the major players out of the leftist playbook, and that's the teachers union. Because when more parents start utilizing choice, there would be less need for teachers who pay dues to the teachers union.
Well, we could get rid of the federal teachers unions by simply, and I'm surprised Trump didn't do this, revoking JFK's executive order. See, the only reason we have federal union employees or federal employee unions is because of an executive order. Congress never passed a law on it. It's order 10988. I remember because it's sequential, 10988. So if you look that up, executive order 1098, that's Kennedy's order allowing for federal worker unions. So all Trump has to do is revoke that one. So no more. So Trump can get rid of all the federal unions, which he should do, because government workers should not be allowed to unionize because they don't negotiate with their boss. That's us, the taxpayer. They negotiate with politicians who take our money, our tax money, to pay unions and buy votes with it. You know, that relationship between the politician and the government union person is an illegitimate relationship. It is an inherent bias, and it should be illegal because they're not negotiating with the people that have the money. See, a private union negotiating with a private company, there's a finite supply of money.
Yeah,
there's a finite corporation. Go ahead.
Particular, Bert, that particular segment of industry, government union, a lot of blacks who are Democrats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but if you revoke that executive order, there'd be no SIU, there'd be no teachers unions at the federal level. I'm sure there'd be state and local level, but there'd be no federal teacher unions, no federal government workers unions. None of that stuff would exist. They'd be gone.
And see, when Nancy Pelosi say we're going to go after your guns, well, then the conservatives say, well, we're going to go after your government unions, which is a lot easier
anyway.
Because it's a executive order.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's 10 o'clock.
It is. Well, let me play a thing I promised to play Brianna earlier, which is our piece on the church and state, the actual explanation of what really happened between Thomas Jefferson and the Danbury Baptists in Connecticut. So, Bianchi, I'll see you tomorrow. Hopefully. We've got Wednesday. We've got Captain Tom Stewart with the defense report. We've got what else do we have here? We have our women, our Wild Women of Wednesday Wellness. I'm not sure who's going to be on yet. We never know. There's like any of the three of them. Or
yeah,
all of them.
I can't wait
on
till Wednesday. Get giggling Wendy and the rest of them.
Oh, yeah. Wendy Arthur with the Oh My God report, Bill Fecky with his report, and the Women of Wellness, and Captain Tom Stewart. Who brings on the most amazing guest.
Yes.
That show last week, do you remember that one when we had Dr. Sandy Myrecki? Were the two people she brought, the Air Force cadets and the whole vaccine crap mandate stuff, the COVID jab? That show was amazingly popular. That reached a bunch of folks.
Yeah,
so,
you bring them again on the basis of the country, the basis of the founding documents. Founding documents should be mandatory.
Well, it should. But we have a channel that does that. We have our Action Radio Founding Moments is the YouTube channel where I'm putting all these things in. So it's there. I've made like 36 of them, I think, already. I need to make more. It's going to be a multi-year project. All right, Bianchi, take care. We'll talk to you soon. I'm going to play this. Thank you. Play this here. And let me see if I can find it here real quick. And this is on Church and State. I'll be right back in a bit with the final closing stuff. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida.
Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. There is no separation of church and state in the Constitution. Therefore, the Supreme Court can't imagine that it really is there or should be there, so they can't create the rule out of thin air and then enforce it as if it actually did exist. The biggest problem with the controversy between Thomas Jefferson, then president, and the Danbury, Connecticut Baptists, a religious minority, is that everyone focuses on the answer by Thomas Jefferson, saying there is a wall of separation between church and state, but they never consider the request made by the Danbury Baptists that Jefferson sought to answer, and therefore where the wall of separation actually is. If you only have the answer, then you can make the question anything you want, including making the question fit the answer to advance an agenda or denying that there even is a question. The question now is whether the government is free from any of the moral constraints or persuasiveness of religion, such that religion and government are walled off in isolation from each other, so that government can contemplate and implement any power for themselves without any organized religious participation, debate, opinion, objection, or protest. That is a complete bastardization of the exchange between Jefferson and the Baptists, and it has been used to advance a bogus set of laws and court opinions. The background for this controversy comes from the article mentioned below, which says, "The First Amendment was meant as a limit on the National Congress only. Madison wanted limits on the states too, but they were rejected. State limitations on religious liberty and establishment persisted after the First Amendment was adopted. Religious tests for office remained in place in most states, and Connecticut, 1818, and Massachusetts, in 1833, did not disestablish their official state churches until decades later. The Supreme Court reinforced the idea that the Bill of Rights did not apply to the states, but rather only to the national government in Barron v. Baltimore in 1833. Back to me. Where this becomes especially critical is when the states, not the state as in government in general, but the individual states, established their own religion and churches because they were not subject yet to the First Amendment. It is in that context that Jefferson is responding to the Danbury Baptists. The key part of the Danbury Baptist letter to Jefferson is this clause: "What religious privileges we enjoy as a minor part of the state, we enjoy as favors granted and not as inalienable rights. And these favors we receive at the expense of such degrading acknowledgments as are inconsistent with the rights of free men." The Danbury Baptists, being a religious minority in a larger group of Congregationalists, which was the state religion of Connecticut, were being discriminated against for not being part of the state religion. And because the First Amendment only referred to Congress making no law regarding the establishment of a government religion, but left the states free to do so, we had religious freedom at the federal level, but privilege and discrimination at the state level. That is why the Danbury Baptists wrote Jefferson. Now Jefferson's response makes sense. He says to the Baptists, "Believing with you that religion is a matter which lies solely between man and his God, that he owes account to none other for his faith or his worship, that the legitimate powers of government reach actions only and not opinions, I contemplate with sovereign reverence that act of the whole American people which declared that their legislature should make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, thus building a wall of separation between church and state." Put in modern English, the individual relationship between man and God is direct, and the wall of separation is so that the government never crosses that wall between individuals, their churches, and God, with state religions, state churches, religious laws and tests, religious qualifications for office, etc., etc. However, there is nothing in law or the Constitution preventing churches, religions, and religious individuals like pastors, priests, ministers, etc., and just regular folks too, from exercising moral persuasion, evaluation, and criticism over government, because the free exercise of religion also includes the redress of government for grievances. The wall of separation, of which Jefferson spoke, only works one way. To understand Jefferson and the Baptists, it's not the wall of separation between church and state, it's the wall of separation between the free exercise of religion and any state-established religion. That's it. Everything else is agenda-driven narrative. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This episode also used Thomas Jefferson's misunderstood letter to the Danbury Baptists from the Washington, Jefferson, and Madison Institute website. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. See all the fun we have here on the show? This has been a great day. We've covered a lot of ground. It may have gotten a little tedious. I don't like to have 2 hours in a row with a guest or a report. That's unusual. I am looking for another report to fill that to fill one of those hours, just because it's just easier. It's just better. And Wednesday has the opposite problem. Wednesday it's all reports and there's no time, you know, for me to talk about issues. But that's okay because we have such good reporters. So tomorrow, once again, we've got Bill Fecky leads the show off, and then we have Wendy Arthur, Bill Fecky with Fecky Report, Wendy Arthur with the Oh My God Report. We've got our Wednesday Women of Wellness. And then we've got Captain Tom Stewart with our defense report. So it's going to be a busy day. Thursday is the World's Greatest Doctors panel. And Friday is kind of our free-for-all with gun reports, a constitutional report, and a financial report. And then the last hour is going to be interesting. We're going to talk butterflies. I love butterflies. Wait, you don't like butterflies? What's wrong with you? We have a butterfly house controversy in Milton. You know, you'd think of all things to worry about in the world, you know. But yeah, listen, from nuclear war to butterflies, we cover it all here. And that's what we're going to talk about Friday. A couple of announcements on the way up. I want to encourage you to read that broadcast page. You know, the one under our title, Action Radio, the globalists in Europe and here versus us. I prefer us. You know, so I try and come up with pithy titles every day. But if you read those notes, you know, we've got encouragement to share the show. You got the website, writeyourlaws.com. You know, get us with drive times, just to hook up your cell phone to your car audio. You know, we have our schedule. Then we have our discount codes, WYL for, you know, MyPillow and Grave Care. And we've got Strike Force Energy. That's a discount code. Those are our three affiliates. So far, we're going to have more. And then, of course, the last part talks about the show times, talks about how to use the keyword search to find the episodes you want. We've got a lot. We're coming up on our 1,000th show on Blog Talk Radio. So October 10th, Monday, October 10th, is our 1,000th show. It also happens to be Columbus Day. So Columbus had a discovery and we did too. So 1,000 shows, 1,000 Blog Talk Radio episodes of Action Radio are coming up Monday, the 10th of October. It's kind of interesting. October is usually a big month for me. Things happen. Stuff is crazy. Anyway, so you look at the bottom of the show and you'll see that last panel has our show times, has our keyword search, has our Skype name. If you want to call in from anywhere in the world, if you have Skype online, it goes directly to the show. We've got our Founding Moments on YouTube. You can find that. Contributors, go to paypal.com/paypalme/actionradio. Our bill site, writeyourlaws.com. And my public email, greg@writeyourlaws.com. So that's what it's all about. And I'll be back tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. Central Time. And we've got it's still daylight savings time. We're going to have standard time coming up pretty soon, but we're still on daylight saving. And I will see you all tomorrow. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system.
You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed.